So hear your bill, and when we do, we'll move it right over. So we're on House File 3962. Welcome up some more.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This file 3962 is often called spotter trucks. Spotter trucks are trucks that move semis around the yard, say at a FedEx yard or the like. They do not go on public roadways, and I've worked with Mr. Essenson here from the Minnesota Trucking Association to address an issue concerning the taxation and the licensing of those trucks. So with your permission, I return to Mr. Essenson.
Welcome, Mr. Essenson. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeremy Essenson. I work for the Minnesota Trucking Association, and we are here to talk today about spotter trucks. And there's a little picture of a spotter truck. It's probably easier than me explaining it. Representative Moore did a good job. It's just a single-axle, single-passenger vehicle that's used to quickly move trailers around trucking companies or warehouses that have a lot of them, stage these vehicles and whatnot. The reason we're here today is because for about 20 years, DVS has licensed these vehicles without really any problems. And what happened, at least as far as we can tell, last spring, DVS, in auditing its own rules, discovered that they should never have been licensing a particular type of vehicle, a particular type of spotter truck, the not for on-road use as designated by the manufacturer. And there are for on-road use, not for on-road use vehicles. This is a little bit murky and complicated, but essentially there's two types of these vehicles. They look identical except for the fact that one has a EPA certified engine and one does not. Now what happens is DVS can only license vehicles that have the EPA certified engine, making them a for on-road use vehicle. And what we're trying to do is with that abrupt change, give folks a 5-year period to depreciate out their old vehicles, get the new and appropriate type of vehicle, the on-road use vehicle if you're driving them in an uncontrolled parking lot or, you know, the vehicle ever touches a road, and then get them to purchase the correct vehicle, license it correctly, etc.
Okay, great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. S. Center or Representative Morrow? Anyone from the public would like to testify for or against this bill? Well, I think people are really sleepy. With that, we'll be done with that one, but again, we cannot move it and lay it over until we have a quorum. So thank you, Mr. Essenson, for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Representative Moore, did you want to go to your next one?
Is that with your permission?
Sure, House File 4100, members. That's what we're on now. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. McCormick from the Department of Vehicle Services will be joining me, and there's also a handout that I believe you'll be getting on this. This concerns the Department of Vehicle Services computer system. This is an antiquated computer system that some parts, I believe, are around 20 to 25 years old. This does everything from vehicle registration, certificates of title, driver's licenses, communication with law enforcement, and ideally, if it was working well, it would also be able to communicate with other states and the federal government, including Homeland Security. Last year, we had a bill that provided appropriated funds for pre-design of a new computer system. I think everyone who's looked at this issue agrees that a new computer system is needed. Madam Chair, members, the question is how we pay for this computer system. This computer system is, the governor proposed pay for this computer system, which will cost between $48 and $50 million over a 4-year period by using trunk highway funds, or in other words, road and bridge money. What this bill does is offer an alternative approach. This would add $1.75 to certificate of title and driver's license, renewal fees. You'll see the amounts on the bill itself. And I would, at this point, stand for questions. I'm sure Ms. McCormick would be happy to answer questions as well.
Okay, so members, this is one of the fees that are, can move, keep going, that we hold through here just to hear the fee. Are there questions to the fee? Is there public testimony for or against the fee? You're really doing really well here, Representative Morrow. Representative Liebling. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Representative Morrow. I feel kind of bad asking you this, but I know it's going to come up in another venue anyway. Do you have any idea of how regressive or progressive this might be? Representative Morrow?
Madam Chair, Representative Weaver, I don't think I could say that. I'm sure there may be part of mine here, but not.
We have people who can actually.
That's what I'm going to say.
And there might be a little more weight than all of us, because we're going to ask Mr. Michael. Mr. Michael?
Sorry. Madam Chair, I think this would probably have about the same incidence effect as the base part of the motor vehicle registration tax, which is a flat amount per vehicle. I'm guessing this, obviously, because it's on driver's licenses, it's almost like a head tax or a poll tax or something like that, where every person in the state, I think you have to renew your license every 4 years, is going to, you know, have to pay $1.75. So it's going to be definitely on the regressive end of things, because it's not at all related to income. It's a very low amount. That's the only sort of redeeming feature that you can say about it. Sort of like any
feature.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, from my interactions with the Department of Public Safety and my constituents' interactions with it, I know this is needed. This is really needed. But I don't know, I guess I'd like to find a way to do this that would be a little more progressive. And I'm thinking, just off the top of my head, I'm kind of wondering whether, if we get a surcharge on the registration, the tabs, which are graduated or something like that. Have you thought about that one?
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, that's actually included as part of the bill. And just to note, we've talked with members of this is, as I said, a work in progress. We talked with members about the possibility of a sunset to have this $1.75 go off after the computer system has been completed. So as Mr. Michael mentioned, for example, the $1.75 in the driver's license, that would in essence be a one-time $1.75. And then we do have the certificate of title and other items mentioned here also at an increase of $1.75.
Okay, so Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is there a fiscal note for this as well? I didn't have a chance to ask the question I wanted to in finance because there was a huge line of people and I wanted to keep things moving, and I don't like to see things get delayed and bogged down around here, so that's not part of my MO. Madam Chair, is there a fiscal note with this? And I guess the reason for the question is, and maybe Ms. McCormick can answer. I know we're talking about upgrading technology. I certainly believe that that's something we need to do, we should do. I absolutely support it. Typically, when we improve technology, particularly if we're talking about $25 million a biennium, it's big money. And are there going to be cost savings for the department? And I'm thinking, are we creating some efficiencies here? Are we going to be able to get rid of people who are currently doing manual processing and either redeploy them or reduce some FTEs at the department?
Good morning,
Madam Chair and Representative Coles. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. At this point, it's difficult for me to say that we would be able to reduce staff. We're already working with a very lean staff. In 2003, we had to lay off 80-some positions. Because we're so production-oriented, it's difficult for me to say that at this time, but obviously we're looking for ways to create efficiencies. So I think what we may be looking at is moving staff into different kinds of positions, but that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be ways that we can make the system much more efficient. Right now, just to operate the system, we're paying $5.4 million to operate our current inefficient at-risk system. We estimate with a new system, while we would need additional staff to assist with the system, the actual operation of the system costs would decrease to $3.8 million. I think certainly we are looking at a challenging fact in terms of our workforce, that within the next 5 years, 20% of our staff will be retiring. We are working very hard at ensuring that we have good documentation as to everything our staff do, because oftentimes we have a number of
unique situations that come up. A lot of you have raised those because of your constituents in terms of a certain kind of a title where we have to check with another state and things like that, and we need to have all those processes in place. So I think that we will continue to look at ways that we can create make the system more efficient, but we really have to have a secure system and one that's not at risk as the current one is, and that one that's not down some of the time, which isn't just affecting our staff, it affects our 173 deputies and our 125 driver license agents who are the face of our division and our exam staff throughout the state in terms of representing DVS and DPS. The other thing that we need to take into account is that we have 95 exam stations throughout the state, and so in order to have staffing at all of those exam stations, and several years ago there was a large cry from the communities where we have exam stations that they didn't want those to close, they want them to continue to operate, that then we do have to have staffing at all of those facilities. They're not everyday stations, but there's a number of them that are serviced by our staff a couple of times a week or once a week.
Okay, thank you, Ms. McCormick. I'm just going to stop for 1 second here, members, and accept Representative Howe's motion that we approve the minutes of April 23rd. Discussion to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. And now Representative Atkins is moving House File 3962, the spotter truck bill that we just heard. And now we're going to lay that over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Representative Tilbury now moves House File 4100 to put the bill that we're discussing now before us. Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Coles, I do have a fiscal note. And the fiscal note is simply takes the anticipated amount as $12,250,000 for each of 4 years.
Well, Representative Coles. Madam Chair, I think you may be looking at the revenue estimate.
Is there a fiscal?
Okay, and Ms. McCormick indicated, Representative Morrow, that there would be additional employees needed to deal with this. Does the fiscal note identify how many FTEs we're talking about?
Representative Coles, I don't have a fiscal note either. So some people do and some don't.
Yeah.
Is that? It wasn't put in the packet. Okay. Can Representative Coles see the fiscal note? You're the one who doesn't have it, so we need him to see it. No problem, but... Okay, Rep. Cole.
Well, that's fine, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the fiscal note here, and it doesn't... all it does is recognize the revenue. There is no... there doesn't appear to be any reference to new employees, and... although that may or may not be consistent or inconsistent with Ms. McCormick's testimony, I'll leave it for now and think about this some more.
Madam Chair.
And I appreciate that, and that's a confusing Representative Morrow. This committee doesn't really deal with fiscal notes, but occasionally people have a question about them. We're on the rear revenue estimates, but it appears, members, that they say basically the same thing.
Right.
Representative Morrow.
And Madam Chair, I know Ms. McCormick has just indicated she could clarify a bit for Representative Cole, if that would be...
I think he said he's good.
You're good? Okay.
And he'll
okay.
Just jump right back on that mic if he's not. He'll never let us down. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the fiscal note is in fact not accurate or doesn't accurately reflect what the cost would be, I would hope that would be amended before this comes back to us in the form of a final omnibus bill. That's one point. Secondly, what are the reasons for not including this cost with the license tab fee increase that has been approved?
Representative Lanning, before we get on that question, this occurred to me. This is moving on. This is just purely a fee. It'd be one of the ones that goes on. So it's not going to be reconsidered. So we probably need to get Representative Lanning an answer to this question he's asked. Or Representative Solberg, is this going to your committee?
That's where it has to go.
Okay, so Representative Lanning, what do you suggest here?
Well, Madam Chair, I would hope that Representative Solberg, as Chair of Ways and Means, would request a complete and up-to-date fiscal notice. In fact, the one we have is not fully reflective of the cost.
Representative Solberg?
Madam Chair, we can do that, then this is probably a good suggestion. I haven't seen the fiscal note either. It probably reflects the cost. We can ask the department to do an update on it to see if it does reflect any savings as well, or potential savings in the long run.
Okay, so Representative Forbes, I'm bringing you the fiscal note, and I noticed that Ms. Templin has brought the fiscal note to duplicate it, just someone to get it copied. So we will have it here in a minute. But Representative Lanning, does that address your concern?
Yes,
for now? Okay, and so to your question, we'll get the fiscal note around the table here in a minute.
Well,
Representative Lanning.
I would trust that Representative Solberg will follow up on that. Then my other question was, why not incur this cost and tie it, have a nexus to the license tab fee increase that was approved? Why have a separate special fee for this?
Representative Morrow
or
Ms. McCormick?
Madam Chair and Representative, this proposal, obviously the governor's recommendation was to use trunk highway funding for the cost of this system. And so this is a different way, this is a different proposal to do the funding of the system. And so that's the reason that it's coming on its own. This would be a different way to fund the system, but this wasn't what was included in the governor's supplemental budget recommendations and his proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Morrow, do you want to respond to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning. Representative Lanning, in some ways you could say by the governor's proposal is in essence to do that, to take the road and bridge money from the transportation finance bill we passed and move $50 million of it or so to pay for the computer system. The reason I'm at least offering this alternative is to say that DBS has, at least what I understand, traditionally been a fee-based budget, that the fees are based on the services provided. The fees identified in this bill look at certificate of title, auto dealers use this computer system, and the driver's licenses that are created through this system. So that's why I'm just offering members another approach, because I think there may be significant concern, at least in talking with those on the road and bridge side, about taking $50 million out of that money in order to do this. You certainly do offer a third approach, could have done it, I suppose, that way by including vehicle tax fees. That's the answer. That's why I offer this alternative.
Okay.
Further questions? If not, we're going to move it on. Yeah, Representative Solbert.
I know you don't want to spend a great deal of time on this, but let me ask you a couple of questions. I see in the fiscal notice it also says this will be for use to support research. Tell me a little bit about supporting research in the technology issue, computer system.
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, we're talking about the research necessary to draft the RFP and then secure an RFP.
Madam Chair, Ms. McCormick, has this system been approved yet or gone through the Office of Technology or whatever we call that creation we made years ago?
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, we are working hand in hand with, they are part of our stakeholders group and are working with us hand in hand. I have a meet on a, I think a bi-monthly basis with them to keep them up to date on our pre-design project and what we're working on to ensure that their oversight and that we're in sync with the rest of the technology systems that are operated within the state.
Representative
Colbert. That's
good for now.
Representative
Simpson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, you had mentioned something about doing a sunset on this thing. It looks to me like before this gets up for prime time, I would highly suggest that you look at doing that, maybe in ways and means, but if you did a four-year sunset on this, it'd be a one-time cost for everybody, and it would give you your $50 million you need.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Simpson. I tend to agree with you. The one hesitation I've had, Representative Simpson, is in talking with DBS, their concerns are that once they've installed this system, the cost of then maintaining and operating the system to be able to have a fund of money into the future. That's why I'm leaving a little bit of leeway, but in the main, I tend to agree with you.
Does Madam Chair?
Representative Simpson.
further? No? That's been covered.
To that point, those maintenance costs are ongoing right now as well within the department, and they're probably taking them out of their fees. I would think their maintenance costs would be less with this. And I'll also tell you that my experience with this is if they say it's going to cost $50 million, by the time we're done, it's $100.
Thank you for that. Representative Morrow, closing comments.
No, Madam Chair, I thank you for the insights and the ideas, and look forward to taking this bill forward.
Okay, and I don't know that I called for anyone from the public, but if there is anyone, please come forward, and
That's our will mention that the auto dealers have come to me. They support a new computer system. I know the police chiefs and sheriffs have written to Ms. McCormick. They say that we need this for law enforcement purposes, and we've heard from the deputy registrars, as I believe many members have.
Okay, so the motion is to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. And the motion carries, and you're off to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Zellers had a daycare issue and has asked to go first today. Representative Zellers, if your people are here, otherwise I do have a suggestion. Every member, all of the remaining bills are members of this committee, except for Representative Mahoney. And if you are ready, we can go. If you need to go, otherwise we'll get Representative Mahoney on his way.
No, Madam Chair.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, and we've addressed our daycare issues, and spring cleaning is going on. Luckily, a good friend has come over the one day that our daycare decided to do spring cleaning was today, so thank you for your consideration. But with all due deference, Representative Mahoney, no problem whatsoever, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Alex. Representative Mahoney. And Representative Less moves House File 4199 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Good morning, Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I only wish that it had been about 10 minutes earlier before a certain representative had gotten here so that he couldn't have fun with his past legislative assistance. Marriage and parenthood does a lot of different things to the people in our lives. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a House File 4199. I'm going to ask that it be explained by city employee Robert Humphrey, I will turn it over to him right now, and then we'll bring up our, or at least mention who else is in support of this once he's done. Please answer questions.
Welcome, Mr. Humphrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Real briefly here, I've been told to keep it short. Line 1.9 is merely housekeeping. It just takes it from the back, puts it in the front. If you look at line 1.22, 1.23, what we're doing there is allowing a city to assess an initial inspection of a property for the fire certificate of occupancy program. Currently, we can only assess a re-inspection. We charge the fee in St. Paul. We get about 75% of that back. We send out 4 or 5 notices. Our only real tool to get that money back is to revoke the fire certificate of occupancy, which means we're displacing people, and we really don't like to do that in the city. So the assessment is just a nice tool for us, and it would work well. As we go to the back of the bill, line 2.7, recovery of delinquent vacant building registration fees, what this allows us to do is assess vacant building fees, or allow cities to assess vacant building fees. Currently, we can't do that. By their very nature, vacant building fees are hard to collect. We don't know who owns them in many cases, but the taxes always seem to wind up getting paid because people don't want to lose them. So this allows us to collect that money. I guess with that, I'll open it up for any questions.
Okay. President Mahoney, anything further?
Madam Chair, we have legal aid here, Ron Elwood, who's gone through, followed this particular bill through for a while. He could give you about 30 seconds of history. We have the League of Cities here, the multiple family dwelling, multi-housing, what he said. They're here and they're reserving some rights to have further discussions, but at this time they're not in opposition to the bill at all.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. Just you all are aware of the mortgage foreclosure working groups that took place over the summer and fall, and one of them was dealing with issues that attendant with the vacancy problem that the foreclosures were causing, and Representative Hillstrom was leading, one of the leaders of that group, and I'm sure that she will recall that this issue was discussed and was actually forwarded for inclusion in the package of the bills that you've passed, almost all of them already this session. But somehow in the translation, this one particular small issue somehow dropped off, that fell off the table somehow. So I just wanted to let you know that this is something that was an agreed upon idea by a whole bunch of folks working on this this foreclosure issue.
Thank you for that. And Mr. Elwood, even if it had been in, still would have had to come attached to somehow. So it's okay, because there's no duplication of effort there. It's just probably not a good morning. We're all sleepy. But thank you for your testimony, Mr. Elwood.
It's good to have a sleepy committee.
Further questions from the committee? Anyone from the public would like to testify for or against Representative Rukavina? Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think I'm going to ask our
Mr. Humphrey, what kind of money does this generate for St. Paul?
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, we're estimating that on the fire certificate of occupancy end, it would be $400,000 for St. Paul, and the same for the vacant building assessment.
Okay, thank you.
So it would be about $800,000 total for a small department.
Representative Rukavina? Representative Mahoney?
Robert is a ranger. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's a playbook for Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, stand for any questions. Otherwise, I'd ask you to lay this over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Further questions? Nope. We're just now going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the honest tax. So thank you, Rep. Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee.
And Representative Cole, you want to go next, or not Cole? I looked right at you and called you Cole. Rep. Zeller.
No, we're tired now.
Yes, we're all tired. Representative Zeller moves House File 4208, and Representative Zeller has two amendments, and is there one you'd like to take now? You have yes, A1 and the A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I think the one that was a percent a year, Madam Chair, I apologize, I didn't read the...
Mr. Michael?
I think it's the A1.
Is there? A1, says Mr. Michael. Okay, so Representative Zeller moves the A1 amendment for possible inclusion. See, we're really sleeping. Moves the A1 amendment. Discussion to the amendment to get it in the form the author wants it. If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Amendment is adopted. Would you like to move the A2 right now as well?
No, Madam Chair. I give an explanation of the A2. The A2 is a... If this works as well as we had expected, we were going to start. We were going to kickstart, put the repeal into maybe second or third year. So we'd go, instead of a point a year, we'd go 2 points a year. But to make sure that we're on an even keel, we'll stick with just the 1 percentage point a year, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Madam Chair, first to start off, thank you very much for the hearing. You were very accommodating to us, especially. At this time of the year, as we're going forward, if had we known that the merger would have actually stayed, kept going, or if we'd been privy to some of that information, we probably would have done this much earlier in the year. Maybe it would have been a better idea to do it in February, March, and try to give a little bit more incentive as the merger was coming together. But unfortunately, we didn't know until the ninth or tenth hour. And we had to move forward at the end of the session like this. So I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, for the consideration and for bringing it up at such a late hour. Madam Chair, we do have a couple testifiers. I'll just run through the kind of the highlights of the bill real fast, and if any testifiers want to come in, we unfortunately lost a couple to business trips, vacations, and just about everything else. Who'd want to be here on a day like today? But Madam Chair, what the bill does is it offers an incentive zone that was already in a bill, I believe, that Representative Abrams carried 3 years ago, that had a an airport zone, an economic development airport zone, that actually was at out at the airport, meant for an international shipping company, I believe, if I remember correctly. And so we actually had looked at that zone, looking at some of the incentive programs, and actually decided to just grab that zone use it for an incentive program to open the door to Delta Airlines, to not just Northwest Airlines and some of the workers that would be kept here, but open up the door to Delta Airlines and say, we'd like you to come and put your headquarters here in the state of Minnesota. A couple of quick provisions, exemption from income tax, corporate franchise tax, sales and use tax, local tax, and then property tax as well, job credit. So it's a number of incentives in detail. I won't go through those as members. They've probably seen the Job Z. It's very similar to a Job Z, an Airport Z. But then, Madam Chair, the real kind of meat of the proposal is repeal of the corporate income tax. You're going to see in a small business and entrepreneurial council study that's coming around, actually does a far better job than I could explaining some of this. I think I'm going to have it now. In all of our years and all the studying, thank you, Madam Chair, two of the others, and it is a, excuse me, is a website post from the state of South Dakota. They have it literally on the front of their website, putting all the warts, so to speak, from their neighboring state's business climate. It actually includes it right in front on there. You can go download it, and as we did, Representative Gunther actually did that for me. But, Madam Chair, the meat of the bill is repealing, basically, or slowly repealing the corporate income tax rate. For far too long, in Minnesota, we've been at a competitive disadvantage, not just with our neighboring states, but with some of the international states. If you look at some of the corporate income tax rates around the world, Minnesota is one of the highest. If we're going to incent jobs to come to our state, we're going to have to be competitive. Now, the natural question always is, well, where are you going to get the money? You can't just repeal this tax and then not get any more money. Madam Chair, and of course we can't do this on fiscal notes or on a revenue estimate, but the jobs we're losing, the amount of workers, unemployment compensation that we're paying out, we're actually losing more money the way it is. And with the corporate income tax rate, one of the, when we talked with Dr. Stinson when he first let us know about this forecast, said one of the most unpredictable is the corporate income tax rate, the fluctuations. And the regressive tax, and there's a, from the suit study that we had, there's some information about the percentages and how it goes. But Madam Chair and members, repealing a corporate income tax rate will send a message. And after Chair Linteski's objection to repealing it all at once, is it an awfully big kahuna enchilada, if you will, we moved it out to 2010 and then did it 1 percentage point a year. So we may not reap the automatic benefits of millions and millions of dollars overnight, but we're sending a message to job providers, not only in our state, to please stay, but we're also sending a message to job providers in our neighboring states that we not only would like you to come over here, but we'd like you to bring your expansion over here. We've had a number of opportunities in the past, and again, my good friend, Representative Gunther, inundated me with all kinds of information, but the one that I found interesting, Madam Chair and members, was an economic development tool that our states around us have for incentive programs. Minnesota, we currently offer 13. This is grants, loans, loan guarantees, tax exempt abatements, tax credits, tax deductions, equity investments. Minnesota offers 13 total. Our friends in North Dakota offer 22. South Dakota, surprisingly, offers only 7. But Wisconsin offers 48 different incentive programs. And in one in particular are the loans and grants. We do in Georgia as well. They offer 31, Michigan 26. So I'm sure we're at a competitive disadvantage. And when Mr. Rolnick was in here, I think 2 years ago or maybe last year, gave us a kind of long dissertation on how this is a bad idea, why doing some of these incentive programs, competing back and forth is dangerous. We all agreed with them, but we asked him at the end, well, so we're in that situation, what do we do? And I think I'll paraphrase his answer. I don't know, it's a horrible situation you're in. I don't envy you at all. So it's a hard thing to talk about because it's not going to be easy to do this, but Madam Chair, I think the positive, the double positive rather than a double negative by bringing more jobs into the state is we won't be paying up more unemployment. We won't be seeing those costs associated with downsizing businesses. We'll actually be seeing new businesses come in and new high-paying jobs come in. Madam Chair, I'll members of the committee, if there's any questions or if you'd like to take testifiers, whatever you'd like.
Okay, thank you for that. Do you want to have a testifier first or just...
Sure, that's fine.
Whatever you'd like. I guess, I want to tell you, Representative Sellers, that, you know, I don't know that this particular bill will be the right solution, but I do think that we're all worried about
the situation with Delta, and it's very serious for the state of Minnesota. I completely agree with you, and I think that you know, we have a lot of people say they're the economic engines in the state, and you know, we've wrestled here with things like, you know, Mall of America. You know, this one has, your bill has, in my estimation, significantly more credibility. The amount of economic, the amount that there is an economic engine being, you know, amount of energy being created out of that airport is much higher than something like the Mall of America. And I think this committee has to make those choices with limited public subsidy. And while I don't know that, you know, this all can happen, but, and I understand the governor is working with all of you and with the Senate and the House majorities to try to say what is the right attempt. I mean, I agree with you. This is much more serious for the state of Minnesota than all these other sort of corporate subsidies that people have been pitching, you know, all year. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. And so if you, you know, if there's somebody you want to tell it, have us go with more. Okay, Rep. Bolt and then Rep. Lesh.
Madam Chair, I want to thank you for that comment, because I think you know, bipartisanly we are concerned about this issue. As you know, and I suspect most of the members of the committee know, I asked for a hearing on this issue last week. I understand Chairman Atkins is having a similar hearing, maybe later today. This is a significant issue. I appreciate your comments. I'm not 100% convinced that this is absolutely the right way to go, but we have a vehicle that we should be exploring. We should have this conversation and this debate as a legislature. These jobs all the jobs that spin off from it, the whole tax and regulatory environment here in Minnesota, and what it does for businesses, and businesses, well, that's not, we've heard time and time again, it's not the only reason they make decisions. Everybody tells us, and I believe it, that it is absolutely one of the considerations when they're deciding where they're going to site new jobs, where they're going to locate, where they're going to start up. And if we don't take a look at this issue seriously, you know, we're going to continue to be at a significant disadvantage. So Representative Lenteski, I want to thank you for hearing Representative Zeller's bill, for giving it you know, some serious consideration. I respect that you may not think this is the exact right way to go. I'm not 100% convinced it is either, but I think we absolutely have the discussion, so thank you for holding the hearing.
Well, Representative Coles, I think some of the folks that say that they're the creators in the economy actually came to Minnesota because of the airport and its international status. So I think people like to put the, you know, egg in front of the chicken, and I think this still makes people really think about what would this mean to the Minnesota economy. And I think that's why people invest in the University of Minnesota as well, and then try to have a competitive tax climate for our major corporations so that they can be here. So, you know, it is a big issue for all of us. So I'm glad we're at least starting to think about it, even though we're sleepy. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Zellers, last night when you all were wrapping up on the House floor, I was on a flight back from Dallas, where three flight attendants were talking, one from Delta, one from Northwest, and one from American. They were all, the one from American was the flight attendant on the flight, and then the one from Northwest and the one from Delta, they were sitting as passengers, and they were all discussing the merger, about how this is going to go down. And of course, my ears perked up quite a bit. They obviously pay attention to the industry quite closely, and we are forced to pay attention to it when something like this happens. It was their estimation that we're all SOL, no matter what, that this is less, a bill like this would be less rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, to a reference I heard in some other committee not too long ago, but rearranging deck chairs on the Hindenburg. And I think more or less, this is an effort to say we're going to entice you to stay here, we're going to entice you to come somehow, but in sending a message that I think Representative Zellers, you didn't characterize it this way, but Minnesota is open for business and we really want you to stay. I think the message we're sending here is we're suckers. And I'd like to ask, maybe Mr. Michael can answer me, but Representative Zellers, you said that we're going to lose more money in the long run by not enacting this. I wonder, Mr. Michael, can you tell me, or if anyone else in the committee can tell me, what were the promises that were made those years ago when we handed over $900 million to Northwest Airlines that we would gain vis-a-vis those subsidies?
And Mr. Michael Williams, I did ask Mr. Michael, I was just asking him now, and I don't think he's had any time really to get to this, but As this kind of all unfolded and Rep. Gonzalez offered his amendment on the floor, I did ask Mr. Michael to if he could sort of tell us what the tax incentives and packages of the past may have been, and so that's I think what Representative Les is asking here now, and I don't know that there's been time for the full ability to prepare to answer that question, but so Representative or Mr. Michael, to Representative Les's question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I years ago, whenever that was, back in 1991, I did work on that legislation, but I have not gone back and reviewed it, and quite frankly, it was revised and renegotiated at least once or twice, and most of it actually was later provided by MAC rather than the state. But in return for, there was a financing that was done in return for the location of a heavy maintenance base, and originally it was planned to have an engine plant, which ultimately became, I believe, a reservation center in northern Minnesota. And in return for that, there were job credits, but the main thing was the sort of financing of the maintenance base. And there were covenants that were made, which I think most people are aware of, regarding the maintenance of the hub and the headquarters and so forth, that are going to be obviously a matter of discussion during these merger negotiations, between mainly, I believe, the MAC, which is sort of in the prime position as the entity that entered the agreement with the airline company. But quite honestly, I have not reviewed the details of any of those in years, and so I'm not prepared to talk about them with any authority.
Okay, and I'll just jump on there, Representative Les. I know Representative Hillstrom is very interested in as well, because remember there was the whole refinancing through the local government committee just 2 years ago with major concessions for Northwest Airlines, and the reason we didn't deal with it is because that was through the MAC, which is the local government committee. Representative Les.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One other question I wonder if Mr. Michael could answer for me. In which state is Northwest Airlines legally incorporated?
Representative Zeller or testifier? Nobody knows. Somebody from Representative Demmer, you know?
No.
Madam Chair, I do believe it is the state of Minnesota.
Well, I know that, Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, they're of major companies and employers of over, say, 7,000 to 8,000 there in the state of Minnesota. There are not too many of them, but of major corporations with more than 3,000 employees, there are probably only about 5 that are actually incorporated in Minnesota. The rest of them incorporate in Delaware and some of the other states with favorable provisions in their corporations law and tax laws, which essentially say they can, raise all their money in states with low tax laws. And then, for example, Walmart, which does leaseback arrangements and strips the states in which Walmart stores sit of local revenues, income tax, and property tax money. So that's my concern. The corporations, they're going to do this anyway. They're going to incorporate where they want, and they're going to fleece citizens and taxpayers of their money. And, I say this, Representative Zellers, knowing full well that you have good intentions, because this is your philosophy on, I think, how you entice businesses here. But I say that as a Minnesotan, I still feel burned from what happened the last time, and it just happens to be poignant that we're talking about the same company that we lost out $900 million on. So no ill will necessarily. I just want members of the committee to remember what happened last time.
Representative West, a lot of us, I think, feel burned by that. I just want to, Representative Atkins has a thought on this. But Mr. Michael, following up on something that Representative West just said, can you explain for the committee again what a REIT is and how it's dealt, how Minnesota is sort of how FOCs that we've worked on interact with what Representative West just talked about? Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, I'm not so sure that this is very relevant to the current topic of discussion, but in states that do not have unitary taxes, a standard way that companies minimize their state taxation is by creating separate companies
in which they essentially place valuable intangible property. Usually those companies are cited in either the states of Delaware or Nevada, which favorably tax that kind of income. And then through the pricing arrangements within their corporate structure, they shift as much income as realistically possible into those low-tax states. Now, in unitary states like Minnesota, that plan of tax minimization does not work, because essentially all of their income from all of the businesses involved in the unitary group are lumped together, and then the apportionment formula determines how much the unitary state taxes. However, our FOC structure permits them to qualify those companies as FOCs if they get the minimum foreign requirements. And so the Walmart structure, which has, you know, been revealed by litigation in North Carolina and extensively reported on by the Wall Street Journal, would normally not work in Minnesota, except without knowing this, I would be willing to place a small bet that Walmart has qualified their REIT structure in Minnesota as an FOC.
Oh, that was a double cup of coffee tax thing this early. But it is a tax committee, and Representative Atkins is going to be dealing with the other pieces, so we do want to talk about the tax items. Do you want to respond first?
Real quick to
Representative Lesch.
Exactly, and I think Representative Lesch, if you went to page 3 of Representative Atkins' 1 p.m. speech, you probably should have had your answer to your, the incentives and the monies and number of things. But Representative Lesch, it is, you'd be surprised, but I agree with you, and that's part of the reason for the bill. If we can get on an even and even level playing field, as Representative Lucheski has been trying to do with some repealing some of the incentives. We disagree maybe on some of them. The R&D, I think, bipartisanly is disagree, but I understand the position she's in. This is a horrible, horrible climate, horrible season to be doing what she's trying to be doing. And I think having her brothers would probably do a lot different things, and maybe even what my bill, she actually started off with that at the beginning of the session with repealing some of the tax rates, and a great idea. But if we're going to do this, you know, you look through the study that we put together, Representative Lesch, that the business tax, and that you can pick your poison in there. The one that I, you know, just the overall rankings, which is on page 4, and then the, you put the whole chart, the whole graph is on the back. But you look at, excuse me, page 3, you look at where the whole tax rating is. And you're 49th, and you can pick your poison in there. There's all kinds. There's corporate income tax, there's sales tax, there's property tax, there's tax, capital gains tax. But if you add up the total burden, the whole thing all together, you look at where we rank, and we've got to do something, and not necessarily incentive. I know you're focused on the airport because that's one of the reasons why the bill came out, but it's also the entire business climate in our state. And if we're going to do, if our job is going to be, you know, get the deposit check and slap you down as you leave our state, what incentive are we going to have for a business to come here and, God forbid, they decide to leave or change course, or maybe the business is sold to somebody else who's headquartered in another state. So far, our response has been, we're going to sue you and get the deposit check on the way out. And again, we should get all the money that the citizens gave out. In some cases, I disagreed with the subsidies or the loans or the cash payments we were giving to businesses. But if the response, the only response, is going to be, just give us the money on the way out, I can't see the business owner. And yes, these are my people. My dad's a small business owner. My stepdad's a farmer. Half my family own their own small businesses. These are my people, so I wouldn't necessarily say the giant corporate Walmarts are, in my estimation, my people. The small business owners, the guys that start a business of 2 and 3 people and build that into maybe 50 or 60 and are bought up by a bigger corporation, or just expand their business and then sell it off to the next generation. Yeah, that's who we're trying to help. And so far, at least at this point, we have not had. Representative Chairman Chesky had a great start with trying to repeal some of those taxes, but we've got to do something. We've got to send some other message than, we're just going to get the money on the way out, and by the way, come here just because. And I agree with the higher standard of living, the education, the University of Minnesota, International Airport, the culture, that's great. But in a lot of cases, these business decisions aren't made on that. if there's a financial planner or analyst sitting in a room with a business owner, he doesn't say, yeah, but they've got a really cool museum, or there's a really great place to go and watch a, say, a baseball game. It's based on the business decision and the bottom line, because the bottom line is either going to pay the stockholders or you're going to actually add more jobs to that business. You're going to hire more people. So it is a philosophical discussion, and I appreciate the time and the deference, Madam Chair, and I know Representative Atkins is going to have a hearing on that point, that part of the discussion at 1 o'clock today, and you're more than welcome. I think all of your questions will be answered there.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Ellis, I absolutely agree with the objective of your bill. I don't think anybody in the room would disagree, but it's kind of like punishing a naughty child with a Hershey bar. You've got a situation where we have an ongoing existing contract with this entity called Northwest Airlines, under which we've given them in the neighborhood of $500 million, real taxpayer dollars, in exchange for a guarantee on employment, a guarantee on a hub, and a guarantee on their corporate headquarters. And what we are going to apparently do under this bill is award that breach with even more money. And we're going to slap them around with a checkbook. When I was jotting down what I think this should be called, it would be the breaching airline development zone, a bad Z, because it essentially takes corporate welfare, does the Jose Canseco program of juicing it up with steroids, and brings it back even worse. All we need to do is just hold them to their current ongoing existing contract with the state of Minnesota, rather than go down this path. You know, we all gathered around the table and talked about how we didn't like corporate welfare, and boy, we got to get after this. And this just goes down that path even further. And I think it sends a strikingly poor message to others that we might incentivize, Madam Chair. Certain folks have been in our neighborhood recently asking for certain help, that if they choose to breach their agreements with us, we're going to pull out the checkbook and write them an even bigger check. Or if they were the naughty child, we'd give them a bigger Hershey bar. I don't think it sends a very good message about how we ought to do business. That's kind of my sense of things, Representative Ellis, but I absolutely agree with the objective, and I hope that we can do our best to just have them live up to the agreements that they made to keep their hub here, to keep those jobs here, and to keep their headquarters here.
Representative Atkins, you have a new one on my list. That was good, because we've had Job Z, Farm Z, Mall Z, Green Z, and now we've got Bad Z. So that, did we forget any?
Don't forget Ball Z.
Yes.
My other acronym was Plum Z, but I...
Well, Representative Atkins, and I think you're right. I mean, saying it that way makes the point that they're all corporate subsidies in at their essence, and we have to pick. So.
You're also
a
chimpanzee.
That's correct.
That was on the house floor.
That was a bonding bill. We should have thought that one. Well, oh, thank you for that. Okay, so Representative Demmer and then Marquardt. Representative Zeller.
Sorry, Mr. Just to that point, I think it was Gorilla Z, and I couldn't let that get by without Representative Seifert, that somewhere in the room feeling that the gorillas were again being mentioned. So it was a gorilla Z, I think, from Representative Seifert.
Yeah.
But Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, that's true if it was Northwest. We're not trying to incite Northwest or incent Northwest to stay. They're gone. They're being bought by Delta. What we're trying to do here is convince Delta to move their headquarters here. And by what we've done so far, if I'm a business owner in Minnesota and I've made any agreement with the state, God help me. Whether it be a contract, whether it be an incentive program, whether it be our job or our last, I suppose, last best offer to them is, we're going to sue you on the way out. And again, that is a philosophical difference. But we're not trying, we can't incent Northwest to stay. They're gone. They're bought by Delta. What we're trying to do in the bill is bring Delta to Minneapolis or Eagan or wherever they would like. But obviously this zone is at the airport, so it's not Northwest, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. If they made agreements, they should pay up. But if that's our only response to the new corporate citizen, which is going to be Delta, Northwest is going to be bought out. So a new corporate citizen in the state of Minnesota is going to be Delta Airlines.
And if we're going to, again, I'm not in the room making the business decisions with them, but as a business owner, I think it would be awfully hard to say it's a great idea to stay here when their first, I don't know, volley or first taste in their mouth is we sued on behalf. And granted, when you buy something up, or in my case, when my poor wife married me, you accept a lot of baggage, pardon the pun, with whoever you're bringing to the table. So they probably are going to have to accept the baggage that comes with this, which may or may not be some of these corporate subsidies or lawsuits that are going to come. But we're not trying again. We'd like to keep the Southwest jobs here, but part of that is bringing Delta's headquarters here, because you've got to send a different message other than, thanks, we'll see you later, bye.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With all due respect, Representative, you're wrong. We've never once talked about suing them. We've just said, just like any other business, Northwest, just like any other person in Minnesota, just live up to your agreements. For heaven's sakes, for Minnesotans, we're supposed to be good to our word. In this case, we put the word down on paper. Both sides signed it. They gave us their word, Representative Zellers, that they were going to keep their hub here, their headquarters here, and those jobs here. And I just expect them to do that, like any good neighbor, like any Minnesotan would. Never once have I said we're going to sue them. I just said let's fully enforce our agreement with them. And as far as Delta is concerned, if they buy Northwest, which apparently is still many, many months away, but they've started down that road, then I assume like any other acquisition, they would buy their assets, they'd buy their liabilities, they'd have to honor those contracts. And if they would be so kind as to respond to our offer to come and tell us that, we've invited Delta to come see us in the Commerce Committee, which you and I are going to be on, and they've completely ignored us, which I don't think is a great way to enter into a new relationship, but we'll just keep asking politely for them to join us and let us know that they're going to honor those contracts if, in fact, they buy Northwest.
Thank you for that. Okay, Representative Zimmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Boy, as we've gone, I have my name on the list. I got three or four things I'd like to speak to now. I'm going to try to get them in order here. I'll start with the most recent. Quite frankly, I have to agree with both. As a consummate politician, of course, I feel strongly both ways here. Because I do believe that, quite frankly, when one company buys another, Representative Atkins is right. You buy the assets, you also buy the obligations and the liabilities that come with that company, and I believe they know that. I think the key, however, is the tone that we use as a state, whether it's us here in committee, in our state government, our governor, whatever. The tone is, I think, we're all grown up. I think they understand that. I think they understand that they have an obligation. They probably understand that there's something that there's consequences here, and there's contractual, which I don't know the contract, there's contractual relationship that has to be looked into. Having said that, I think our approach should be not to pay up as you're going out the door, but we understand that you understand that you have an obligation here, but let's sit down and see what else we can do. Maybe we can work with you with the existing obligation. Maybe we can find something. And I think that's the value of what Representative Zellers is bringing to the table here. But in conjunction with Representative Atkins, as opposed to, okay, where are we at with this contract, I agree with both. I really do think we have to look at both. There's a contract here, there's a relationship, there are mutual covenants that have to be honored, and we need to go forward. But in the spirit of what can we do to make things better? It's not just, well, you're going, you're out of here, pay up and see ya. Hopefully we're not taking that approach. So that's my comments on that part. What originally got me interested in speaking up, and I agree pretty much with Representative Lesh in terms of, what is the value of this? And, what were we gaining from our whatever amount it was that we incented Northwest with back then? I think in looking at that, we all want to have an understanding of what we're getting for what we're investing. And I think when we do that, everybody probably knows this too, but we have to look not just at Northwest specifically in those jobs, which is what it did, but also related industries and related businesses. The fact that they are here and have those jobs here also created spin-offs. It created some related industry type of things, which has to be included in any kind of analysis in terms of the investment that we made as a state to keep them here. And so I would be very interested in seeing what that looked like and as best we can try to analyze not just counting the number of jobs here, counting how much tax they paid, counting how much income tax or income tax and sales tax they paid, and seeing how that balances off, but also look at related industries that may not have been here but for that hub being here. So that would be part of the analysis. And the last comment I'd like to make is as a, you know, I'm relating, you always relate this back to your own personal experiences, and as a small business owner for 25 years, many, many, many opportunities in a small town to be benevolent as a business owner. Everything from the bowling leagues to the community celebration to the school to the churches and everybody else gives you opportunities as a small business owner to invest, to put your, to give them some contribution in exchange for the goodwill of having your name saying that you helped out. And as a small business owner, you deal, and if you've been there, you understand exactly what I'm talking about, because you deal with these things on a weekly basis. Representative Simpson, are you relating to this? And, you know, you get to the point where you're a bad guy if you don't do these things, as opposed to getting the benefit and the goodwill of doing them. And relating that to us as a state of Minnesota and looking at the value of promotion and the value of the goodwill that we generate by even visiting and by even having an attitude of willingness to provide an inviting environment for these businesses. And I think that's the approach we should be taking as we look at these things. Business is business. The people we're dealing with understand that. They're business people. They understand that you got to make rational decisions. And I guess my thought would be is that we don't get too far on the edge either way in either our rhetoric and or our legislation, so that we throw up flares that we maybe can't deal with this on a rational basis. So, again, I'm rambling a bit here, but I'm relating to my personal experience in a small town, in a small business, with my 3 to 15 employees, depending on the company I happen to have, with what we do as a state, trying to look at what is our competition doing, which is sometimes a competition, sometimes a partner of the other states. And I think that's the approach we need to have, is sit down, see what it's going to take, see how it all ties together when you look at related businesses and the atmosphere that we create, and then do so in a and put our programs together in a rational and thoughtful sense, as opposed to reacting. So those are just comments and thoughts that I had as we went through this conversation, and again, trying to relate my experiences as a business owner and as somebody looking out for the best interest of our state.
Thank you, Beth. Appreciate that. Representative Marquardt, and Broad. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and Representative Zeller says we have to send a message because the business climate is so bad, but I don't know that $1.2 billion in the next biennium, if we need to send that message. And, you know, in looking at the statistics you have here with this, and I'm always really perplexed with this SBE when they put out this index, because when you look at it, they always are looking at rates, just like the personal income rate, you know, top one, you know, 7.85. But you can't compare rates. I mean, what does one state allow you to deduct versus another? What do they base that off of? Is it the federal gross income? I mean, so they just look at those type of things. And then the other thing is just to look at taxes. I mean, to say, and you've alluded to that, you know, there's quality of life and other things. But even when you look at taxes, and I've heard a number of times of how bad the business climate is, but, you know, even from the governors, Department of Employment and Economic Development, positively Minnesota, where you can compare, one of the things they have on here is how Minnesota ranks as far as taxes. And it says right here in the governor's publication here, a 2004 study by the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston found that Minnesota ranked 41st in the ratio of taxes to total business profits, well below the national average. And another spot, well, actually, I could go into several, but I'll give you one more. Minnesota's corporate tax structure is competitive, particularly for businesses with significant sales outside the state. So, I mean, this is from the governor. And so, you know, we talk about this poor business climate, and I just, you know, it's, you know, looks good, and, you know, we've got to just lower these taxes, and it's going to bring in more people and so forth, but you know, you have to look at a lot of different things, and I just wanted to balance this and all the kind of sky is falling, business climate is terrible, with what we're actually promoting as a state to people who go onto our websites and look at this. And
So I mean, you wonder what you're looking at here, and so I don't know if I'm looking for a comment, but I don't know if we need to send a signal necessarily that's going to cost us, well, just in the next biennium, but a lot more after that, $1.2 billion, when, in fact, we rank well below the national average in the amount of taxes per year business profit. So I don't know if you care to respond to that or not. But
Ben Zeller?
Just Representative Markhart, there's an amendment in there. We changed it just a hair. It's just 1% in 2010.
Okay.
So just it's ratcheted down just a little bit from the original.
But ultimately it eliminates it, right?
Yes, Mr.
Okay,
yes,
so ultimately you'd have the full...
Six. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Markhart, I don't think I ever said that the sky was falling or was a crisis. What I'm simply saying is that we've got to do something to be more competitive. Our neighboring states, and yeah, the Small Business and Entrepreneur Council is just one. I mean, as you know, I could have brought in half a dozen different studies from half a dozen different economists. This was just the one that I thought looked the easiest, had lots of big charts. I like pictures, has more pictures on it. But when you're talking about the total corporate climate, if that's fine, if we look good on paper, I'll go back to the letters that we received the other day during the mall discussion. And do you believe the letters or the rhetoric or your own lying eyes when the gentleman from one of the groups said that 75% of the work we're looking at is outside of Minnesota? A work mix projection for the fiscal year 2009 pertains to Minnesota versus out of Minnesota. We are seeing other states acting much more aggressively than Minnesota in attracting large construction projects. This will result in exporting a significant amount of our workforce to other states in order to maintain our revenues. There's a number of other, past few years we've seen dramatic loss of construction projects in the metro area and in Minnesota in general. To survive, we've had to shift our focus to our out-of-state projects to keep our staff involved in projects so we can sustain them, as well as our organization without experiencing unwanted layoffs. The discussion, and that's partially why I appreciate the chair is actually hearing the bill, but we've got to do something. We can't just stay we can't keep things the way they are or the way they were, because it's not just Wisconsin, South Dakota, and actually I think Wisconsin, after going through a lot of this math, I think Wisconsin's actually much more, maybe it's because it's a badger state, they're a little more sly and kind of under the radar. They're stealing a lot more of our stuff and offering a lot more incentives, but they just don't run those horrible ads. And I did try to get Mr. Scott, Dan Scott, the radio guy, to come down here, but unfortunately with the committee, the floor sessions and the structure, we weren't going to be able to do it. But I tried to get the guy from South Dakota to come in. But Representative Markhart, it's not just the one, you're right, it's not just the one or the other. And, Representative Atkins and Representative Lesh's point, you bet. Everybody, again, should pay. If you've made a commitment, pay. That's looking backwards, focusing on the past. We're looking towards the future. How are we going to, and whether it's an incentive, a corporate subsidy, corporate welfare, go around all the buzzwords. There are people making decisions, and it's not about what professional athletic team, what the draft pick is going to be on Saturday. It's on sheer numbers. It's on math. It's on how am I going to grow my business for my employees, for my bottom line, for my shareholders. And it's looking at the math of it. And again, it's these charts, as you said, there's half a dozen different, you can come up with half a dozen different studies that will tell you exact or same or different things. That's for making the decisions. And I'm not saying that the Minnesota, that we're not crying chicken, the sky is falling here, Chicken Little. I'm just saying we've got to have, yes, a message that we are looking in a direction that a lot of our neighboring states, a lot on a global level, to incent or to bring jobs to our state.
Thank you. Representative Broad.
Well, Madam Chair, this discussion is going in all sorts of different directions, and I hope that we're able to get to the testifiers to hear what they have to say related to the different components of the bill. But when we think about the Dobbs, the Bads, the Brees, the whatever we're going to call them now, I hope that we also recall the discussion we had related to Jobs and the proposal that's on the table, that was on the table before this committee, which essentially was the state breaching our contract or breaching our responsibility with the companies that came and located in those job Z zones. that bill went backward and essentially said even though you made this agreement with the state to locate in Minnesota or to expand your business in Minnesota, we're going to say no today. And so your agreement was interesting, but it's not valid anymore. So I just wanted to make sure that we're putting that on the table for that discussion when we're creating new names for zones. But if tax treatment didn't matter, we wouldn't worry about what Delaware did. If tax treatment didn't matter, we wouldn't worry about what South Dakota does, what North Dakota does, what China does, what the cost of doing business. If that didn't matter, we wouldn't worry about it. But we have to because we're global. We have to because business have choices. We have to because technology has expanded things in a way that we have to think about those things. So it's not about being suckers. It's not about having your head in the sand. It's about engaging in a discussion that's important going forward. And so I really appreciate Representative Zeller's bringing his bill here. It's a leverage point in terms of it's related to a specific important situation in Minnesota that gives us the opportunity to discuss what is the tax climate that we actually want in the state. It doesn't matter if you're conservative or liberal. You have groups on both sides, tax groups on both sides agree that the corporate tax is a regressive tax and it's not the tax that we need in the state. So this is one of those things that can actually bring people together on from both sides of the political spectrum. We have different solutions to that problem. But it seems to me this is absolutely worth a heavy discussion, and I really do appreciate, Madam Chair, that you're willing to do this.
Thank you for that. And I think Representative Broad is right. Would someone like to testify for or against this bill or share with us your thoughts? That bill, by the way, the breaking of the contract with Jobsy, just for full disclosure, that was me. That was House File 4103.
We know.
Ms. Larson, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'm here to make some comments about the corporate tax phase-out provisions in Representative Zeller's bill. And first of all, I want to thank Representative Zeller for bringing this issue forward, starting the discussion, and specifically thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing it, especially I know you're all up till late last evening. Evan LeBroad mentioned earlier, I think there is general agreement among most folks that the corporate income tax is a problematic tax. And frankly, it violates just about every principle of good tax policy. It is regressive. And in fact, I think a recent Minnesota Taxpayers Association study showed that if you were able to cut business taxes in half, and that's all business taxes, not just corporate tax, but you would basically make disappear the so-called unfairness that we see in the tax incident study. Much of the regressivity that is talked about in that tax incident study is because of business taxes. And so for that reason alone, I think that there is agreement from lots of different groups that it's a bad tax. The other problem with the corporate tax is for all the angst that is surrounds the tax, and it, relatively it doesn't raise as much money as our other major taxes, but it is incredibly complicated and costly to administer for both the taxpayer and for the state. I've seen some numbers that show that up to 8% of the revenues raised from the corporate tax is spent on administration, and that's a pretty high ratio. There's been discussed here in this committee before, it's a very volatile tax, very unstable, and it certainly is not transparent. But from a business perspective, one of our greater concerns is it's anti-competitive. There are some studies that show that it is it's negatively correlated with growth. It has a negative impact on investment in the state. And I think that's what we're seeing internationally. The trend is going the opposite direction. The trend is going toward lowering corporate rates. You look in some of the European countries, Ireland, Germany, they have slashed their corporate tax rate, and they are seeing an incredible amount of investment in those countries because of that. Even in Congress, the Democratic Chairman Rangel is recommending reducing the corporate tax at the federal level. Representative Zeller has mentioned earlier, Minnesota, when you combine our rate with the federal rate, we have something like the third or fourth highest rate in the world. And so I think that this discussion in terms of getting us to lower the rate over time, it does send a message to the business community that Minnesota is serious about keeping jobs here, growing more jobs here, and I think that it's the right discussion to have. I know the budget situation right now doesn't make this, frankly, a real viable option this session, but there are some studies that have also shown that if you lower the rate, you actually can bring in more revenues because you're increasing business expansion, and it could, frankly, pay for itself if it's done phased in over time. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for that, Ms. Larson. And Ms. Larson, I should also say, as I said in full disclosure, that my bill that reneged on Jazzy cut the corporate tax rate. So I think that highlights the choices this committee is going to have to make in just a few days. So questions for Ms. Larson? Question less.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Larson. And maybe I haven't drank enough Coca-Cola yet this morning or something. I don't know.
But less? Do you drink Coca-Cola in the morning?
Madam Chair, I drink Coca-Cola all the time.
Oh, okay.
It's my own.
I'll get a little royalty for that.
It's my own little effort to entice the Coca-Cola Corporation to come to Minnesota.
The health bill won't let them do that.
Representative West, four fingers right there. Just pull them
up. I'm waiting for a fit. Okay. Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, but due to that, I'm trying to figure out what Representative Broad just said and what you just said, that corporate income tax is a regressive tax. Maybe if you can just explain, not complicated, but just really briefly, why is it regressive?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Blash, studies have shown that it is passed on in large part. If it can be, and depending on the business and what their compensation looks like, some are more able to pass it on than others. Sometimes you can pass it on in higher prices, depending on where you're located, what your competition is. You may or may not be able to pass it on in a higher price. Your other option is to pass it on in the form of lower wages, less compensation to your workers, or less return to your shareholders.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Larson, Madam Chair. And that's what I thought. Your first nine words, studies have indicated that it is passed on. I don't know what to tell you, but if I had a nickel for every company that came in here and said, you raise our taxes, we're just going to pass it on to the consumer, but that I don't hear from a single consumer, companies keep saying that we pass on your taxes, but it yet seems to be the only people that are lobbying against these taxes or lobbying for them to be lowered are the companies. So I really wonder where the money flows. As any smart person will tell you, when you're looking for culpability or accountability, you follow the money. The people that are getting paid here are the companies. And not the consumers. The consumers aren't benefiting from this. And I understand this is a basic philosophical difference again, but the Minnesota Business Partnership is, again, like everyone else, just a one-trick pony. In a great economy, when things are booming, what's the solution? Lower taxes. When the economy is tanking, what's the solution? Lower taxes. I mean, what options do we have actually to make people accountable and say, well, you know what, we actually have to provide some incentives and some services to the people of Minnesota? The solution can't be every single time lower taxes, especially right now when we have a bad economy, when studies have also shown that the greatest periods of economic growth in this country have been the periods when we have had the most progressive tax system, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So that's just by way of comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that, Representative Lesh, Representative Howard, and then Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe Representative Lesh, you'd like to look across the table at somebody who signs the front of a check. But I think Representative Simpson could give you numerous examples of what happens when his business incurs another cost, a new cost, and what it has to do in turn with his product that he's selling. I think you could probably go down the list from bread and milk, peanuts, carrots, candy, sweets, you name it. Here's what happens. And I can also guarantee you that when he's in his shop, he probably would have been there this morning by now, but he's in one of his stores, what happens to him when his customers walk by him? Now, he could put that in a study for you. He could probably take a little white notebook and walk around the store with him and give you an example of some of the comments from some of his customers.
But Representative West, the one-trick pony comment, if that were the case, I think anybody who comes down to the Capitol to give us their two cents on anything probably is disqualified then, because yes, the business community is down here advocating for businesses, just like Education Minnesota is down here advocating for education. Just like any group that comes in before us is advocating on behalf of their industry. I mean, that's no offense, but that's the whole idea. So, I, again, if you'd like, and a number of the studies, you know, there we can show, again, a half a dozen that show both the same side. But if you want a lesson, again, Representative Simpson said this many times on the floor and even in this committee, what happens when his input costs or when a cost in his business is increased. But I thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize, Ms. Larson.
Representative Simpson, want to comment on what do you do on all those pickles and I don't know what all you said. I don't. Like, I was still stuck on the Coca-Cola, and then you started going through the grocery list there. So, Representative
Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think Representative Lesh, you really need to expand your horizons and go out and kind of talk to some of the people that are buying products on a daily basis. Because they are affected by what we are doing. Every day that we're here, we're affecting them more. So the sooner we can get out of here, I think the better we'll be. Because we do affect the bottom line.
Representative West, do you need to expand your horizon?
Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair. I need to expand my horizon, Madam Chair. But I would just say, you know, there's this presumption that, and I absolutely respect Representative Simpson's experience as a business owner, but there are many people around this table that have been business owners or are business owners at one point. I have commercial property, I have residential property. For 5 years throughout college and law school, I painted houses as an independent business person, independent contractor. I understand what it takes to sign a paycheck, and I have had many people on a payroll that have relied on me, Representative Zellers, and I understand what the effects are of when fees are increased, when taxes are increased. I can tell you right now, my residential property taxes on my properties that are spiking horrendously, I can't match that by increasing rents for my tenants right now. The housing market will not permit me to do that, so I have to absorb that cost. I absolutely understand this. It's just that I think at some point there has to be a more creative solution than the economy is great, so let's lower taxes because people are paying too much in. When the economy is tanking, let's lower taxes. Maybe we need to incent more people to come in. I think there needs to be a more creative solution. That's all I'm saying, Mr. Fillers.
Thank you for that. Representative Mullery,
thank you
for that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simpson, I think you would get a disagreement on your statement from the U.S. military that when you say he has to expand his horizons, I think I remember.
You did a lot more than you did. Some people were just,
certain government officials are not encouraging him to expand.
That's to this point. Representative Lanning.
It's not to this point.
We need a lot more coffee. I can just tell that in this room. No, not to this point? Okay, so it's Representative Marquardt and then Representative Lanning. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And getting back to some of the comments of Ms. Larson and just focusing on the tax rate. And I think that's way too simplistic just to focus on tax rates. And you had mentioned we're one of the highest in the world or whatever, but here's some more information the governor gave me. And it has to do with the Minnesota corporate tax structure is competitive. And it says, unlike many states, Minnesota does not allow local governments to impose any type of tax on corporate activity. So when you look at just tax rates, and like in here, I don't think they're looking at adding back where local units of government can add on to that tax rate. It also says here, Minnesota does not throw back sales from states without an income tax. Throwback states include sales in states without an income tax in calculating income apportionment. This inclusion increases taxable income and business tax liability. We don't do that. They talk about Minnesota staging in a single factor sales apportionment. And I know you're doing your job and you're giving us your spin with things. But we just have to be very careful when we're just talking tax rates. You look at our sales tax, 6.5%. That's relatively high compared to most states. But it's also one of the most narrow bases that we have. And so the governor has given me all sorts of good information, and as I hear some of these things, I'm just, they have to be addressed. And I know, Ms. Larson, twice last year I asked you if you would be able to provide the committee with rough numbers on what percent of business expenses in Minnesota go into taxes. And I know I asked you twice last year, and can you provide those, or is that just something that can't be provided? Because I haven't received those.
President Marshall, Manager,
Ms. Larson.
You want percent of taxes that are, percent of all business expenses that are taxes in Minnesota?
Right. Of all the expenses, take a couple businesses, and they can be a rough average. Take all of their expenses, and then of those expenses, what percent are taxes?
Total taxes in the state?
Correct.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I'm not sure I can get that, but I'll look into it. To answer your other question about the deed information, deed is trying to market the state, and so they're going to put out what the good things that Minnesota has done, and Minnesota did start in 2005 with the help of many of you on this committee to move toward 100% sales factor.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting there very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get there by 2014, maybe. Wisconsin is there this year.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many other states have moved to 100% sales before us. Many, many years ago, we were in the forefront in terms of moving the way we tax corporate income, and we were kind of ahead of the game, and frankly, we've fallen behind. We're going to get there by 2014, but many other states have passed this by already. That will help for many companies. Representative Zeller's bill takes a little different approach, phases down the rate. And as Representative Coles mentioned earlier, not sure this is the perfect solution. There are two commissions that are currently working, and the governor is going to start working, that are looking at this issue in terms of what's the best tax system to have for Minnesota, given the change in our economy, what's the best tax system to have in terms of making us more competitive. There may be other solutions. In Representative Market, we've never said that taxes are the only issue. We didn't come here this session asking for a tax reduction, understanding the budget situation. Frankly, when we had a big surplus a couple years ago, the only tax reduction we asked for was to speed up single sales by a couple of years. We have not been here asking for substantial tax reductions. But given the global economy, and if you look at what's going on around this state with many of our large employers, you look at 3M. They've just moved a major headquarters unit overseas. And if you ask them, one of the big reasons they're doing it is because of tax reasons. And so we can't pretend that taxes are not a factor. They are. They're not the only one, I agree. But they are a factor, and I think as we become more and more in a global economy, they may become more of an issue than they were in the past rather than less. And so I just think that there needs to be a balance. Minnesota's a great place for a lot of reasons. But I think any ranking you look at, overall, we're still a high-tax state.
Madam Chair.
Marquardt, and then be before to that point.
I just want to clarify something Ms. Larson said when you referred to deed. Is the information I'm looking at in here correct?
Ms. Larson. Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I don't know.
Representative Zellers, you handed it out. Correct?
The governor... Madam Chair, I want to use this information.
Is there anyone?
But I don't know if it's. I mean, maybe this isn't correct.
Madam Chair, I wasn't.
Oh, okay, all right. Okay.
No, Madam Chair, I apologize. I meant to say that, of course, their marketing part of the state. They're going to say good things. But they want more companies to come here too. I'm not disputing the documentation that you have. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Okay. And when we mark up the omnibus tax for next week, we really do need to have the governor's office here. I have to say they've not been here very much, and we need to have them start weighing in on all these issues. So, you know, maybe that saying that into a microphone would be helpful, like I just did. So, we are going to need to be hearing as we wade through the corporate subsidy bucket, and this is one of them, and there's a lot of them, and we need Dee here in the governor's office here to explain their position and hear the gamut of the debate that's been going on. And it, you know, we're all getting into it now as it relates to Northwest Airlines and Delta, and that's a big issue, and there's lots of corporate subsidy issues, and is it our taxes, a low tax climate worthy, is that a worthy goal for business? Yes. Are investments important to business? Yes, that's spending. So we are going to need to get some folks in here to have some of that discussion, because the problem that happens is then we hear that nobody was consulted. So we can't move forward on any of these ideas. So it's been very frustrating, I have to say, that we've been talking about corporate subsidies in this room since January or February, and we haven't heard a lot from the executive branch on where they're at. So I you know, for those who work with those folks closely, we really like to see them, and the Omnibus Tax Bill is our next meeting. Rep. Sam Gila Forrest.
Madam Chair, it is interesting walking to the middle of this debate. It's very interesting. The Representative Marquardt, I can't speak to aggregate numbers, but as you know, I work for a small manufacturing company, and like many companies, we closely track our tax burden. I can tell you that our most recent statistics that were recently updated, our fiscal year ends April 30th. So we're coming to the end of our fiscal year. We pay about 55 cents of every gross dollar of revenue to taxes at the local, state, and federal level. So about 55 cents off the top, at least for manufacturing companies with whom I work. And as I said, I don't think you can extrapolate those numbers across Minnesota industry, but at least I can offer some perspective for a small manufacturing company competing in a global market. And this has become part of an emotional issue as an aside. I mean, we're proudly a Minnesota corporation. We don't even hire outside of Minnesota for our talent. Our engineers all come from the University of Minnesota or Mankato State or the Minnesota State Mankato now. But we are getting to the point where we're having to assess options about where we're going to be in the future and where we're going to build. We're in the high tech business, so our competitors aren't in California or in Texas or in Iowa. Our direct competitors are in South Korea, they're in Taiwan, they're in Japan, they're even now in China. China's emerging as a player in the semiconductor test market. So it's an important issue to explore, but that's just the perspective here of one small manufacturing company in Fridley, Minnesota, that's trying to compete in a global marketplace and stay in Minnesota. We're proud to be a Minnesota corporation.
Thank you for that. Representative Lanny.
So thank you, Madam Chair. There are a couple of things that bother me about the discussion we're having here, and I'm glad that we're having the discussion. The first has to do with the Northwest Airlines Delta situation. It seems to me that a number of folks want to focus on the fact that Northwest Airlines may not keep their commitments to the state. They absolutely have to. We have to hold them accountable, and we need to make sure those contract provisions are upheld. That's not the real issue. The real issue is there something, should there be something the state can do to attract Delta's new operation more to the state of Minnesota? And that's where our focus ought to be. Second thing that bothers me is that it appears as though some folks don't think we have a problem in Minnesota. And if you're not convinced that we have an issue here about business climate, I would suggest you go look at what's happening in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Fargo, North Dakota, Grand Forks, North Dakota, and see what kind of business activity is going on there versus what's happening on the Minnesota side. And, you know, another thing that's missing here in terms of identifying what is there a problem, we're hearing precious little from business executives, from folks who are making decisions in Minnesota, for Minnesota companies. And with all due respect to people like Ms. Larson and others, We need to hear from some of the business folks as to what their real assessment is about what it's like doing or trying to do business in Minnesota. And I don't know what we can do to help encourage more of those folks to come forward and tell their story. But if you're not convinced we have a problem, maybe we need to hear from more folks who that I've heard from that can articulate what our problem really is in this state. And so before we dismiss this as just some kind of political game that's going on here, let's try to get at the root of what kind of problem there really is. And we're not getting there yet, and we need to.
And thank you for that too, Weston Lanning. You know, I agree. I have to just be honest, and I'll tell Ms. Larson this now because we've kind of tracked off of Northwest Airlines onto the whole bucket of corporate subsidies. I've been amazed that after all this discussion, the business community has been silent. This committee is looking to cut corporate subsidies, and we've not heard much from the governor or the business community. It's actually stunning to me that we've not seen folks in here sort of lined up to talk about what are the role of corporate subsidies, and you certainly can buy tax relief if you get rid of corporate subsidies, and we've had everybody around this table has weighed in on this issue multiple times, and the omnibus tax bill is on Monday, and I sure hope they're here. I'm just very puzzled by it all, and I don't know if everyone's just hoping it'll just all go away. I mean, it isn't going to go away. We all know the likelihood of the forecast, the deficit growing is high. We're going to cut more, and so I don't know if the goal is, if we just don't talk about it, that we just don't have to deal with it. So I feel a lot of the frustration with Representative Lanning, and I think I have an excellent relationship with the business community in Minnesota, and I just, the silence is deafening to me. It really is. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. If the reason we're not hearing is that they're afraid that somehow the state is going to take it out on them in some way or make it worse, we need to find a way that we can listen to and hear from the business community as to what the real issues are. And surveys have limited value in my mind, but at least that would be something. We need to hear. And if it's not in a public forum, we need to hear privately from folks as to what are the issues. Because if we have a problem, folks, and we're not addressing the problem, you know what? One day we're going to wake up and we're going to see all kinds of jobs leaving this state or never coming here. And then we're going to wonder what happened.
Representative Lanning, I mean, I'm not, you know, we'll get back to the bill here and to Representative Downing. I just want to say that, you know, I think I have to own part of the reason that we haven't heard a lot, and that is because it's difficult for folks who are used to having private meetings to deal with somebody who has public meetings, and that's me. I mean, so I think that might be part of the confusion, and all members know that. We say, can you put this in or can you do it? I always say, no, put a bill in. I mean, the things that happen in the House Tax Committee happen on the camera and on the microphone. So I have not done a bunch of private meetings with folks, because that's just, you all know that. That's not what I do. And I think in general, the culture of the House bipartisanly is a much more open process. And folks need to get used to that. I mean, we are not the legislature we were even 5 years ago. And so people have good ideas, need to say it into a microphone, and that goes both ways. It's not one group or another. That's kind of, I think everybody's on a learning curve in the Minnesota legislature on all groups, whether they kind of lean Republican or Democrat. And I think there's been a culture at the Capitol in both bodies for many years that a lot of things get kind of done behind, you know, negotiated and kind of come out here. And, you know, the Minnesota House has been changing on that for a while in both parties. And I don't know if that's the problem, but the days of just off record, I think, are kind of ending. And I hope folks who are assuming, whether it's, you know, local government aid, or it doesn't matter what the issue is, it needs to be a public situation. And I want to thank all the members of the Tax Committee bipartisanly who have sort of insisted on that process, and it's been going well. I think we're having the culture of the political world and the lobbying world maybe not quite catching up to us. And I know it's a different process in the Senate, but everyone's got to kind of come along with us here, because I don't think it can change anytime soon. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the point, that's exactly that's what we did. You know,
yep.
Besides this bill, you know, there's any number of ones that we put in that probably wouldn't be quite popular. But you know, a freeze on assessments for lakefront property. I mean, there's some folks in the room that think that anybody who has a cabin is living in excess and should just pay whatever. Well, you know what? I think that some of the folks that are paying too much introduced the bill. So you're right, Madam Chair. That's exactly right. And Representative Lanning, to your point, during last year's tax debate bill, that's what I actually did. I looked at some of the businesses that had moved, either to Hudson, to Fargo, Grand Forks, Sioux Falls, a couple in Iowa, in Illinois, and called some of those folks who were still here, either their headquarters or maybe if it was a family-run business, and asked. And you're right. There's a guy in my district alone said, you know, he started his business it's not a cliche. He literally started in a garage. He lived in the apartment above the garage, and now has two businesses, one in Eagan, one in Maple Grove. He said, when we were talking about the exact topic, I said, what is it that makes you to make the decision? Why do you do this? What leads into it? He said, my business partner and I are going to sit down in a meeting, and we're going to discuss all the options that are on the table. Now, that includes offers and with several businesses, what we've asked for, several business owners and presidents and CEOs around the state, for the letters of solicitation they get from governors, economic development groups, you know, the fact that we can fill this high on the table. But his answer was, I'm going to sit down with my business partner, and we're going to look at what's best for our business, what's best for our employees, and then what's best for our shareholders. And that's how we're making the decision. And you're right, Representative Lanning, that discussion, because whether it be fear, whether it be retribution from the government, or whether it be a lack of, well, they don't, you know, they don't care. If the state of Minnesota sends a tax bill and not a letter to say, what can we do to help? I do compliment Chairman Chess, because I think this is one of the only chair, or one of the only committees down here at the Capitol that is willing to do that, is to reach out to businesses. There's far too many in both bodies that have just said, send us your money and we appreciate it. There's no reaching out, and Chairman Chess has done a great job of asking folks, what is it that we're doing? What is it that we need to do? But it's been running the conversations I had with at least 10 different business owners said, this is about my business partner, my financial analyst, the guy who's helping me plan the expansion of my business or the sale of my business. That's where the discussion's coming, because government is either going to harm me or I'm leaving because of government.
Thank you for that. Representative Dammy, to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Lanning, I'll remind you of one of the more memorable days of tax committee last year. One of many, Madam Chair, but one of the more dramatic when we had a bill under consideration to shift the sales tax refund on capital equipment to a state sales tax exemption, something that's supported bipartisanly but difficult to do in the budget times because of the impact on the budget. And the room was full of largely small manufacturers, a lot of family-owned manufacturing concerns from around the state. And there was one gentleman up there, and I forget where he was from, but Representative Broad asked him, what is it that makes it hard to be competitive in Minnesota? And what did he respond with? What did he need to see to be a more successful business?
Workers.
A stronger K-12 system. A stronger workforce development system. Both of which require taxes to happen. He asked for societal changes for more respect for blue-collar jobs. He asked for a change in trade agreements so we stopped shipping jobs overseas. And a couple of other things that I don't recall right now. But never once did he mention taxes. So we have heard from those businesses very powerfully, very articulately, that it is more complex than simply what is the tax rate on some one thing. Because they also need strong workforce, they need the infrastructure, they need those other things that we do provide. So we have heard from them.
Madam Chair, the other day we also heard from several business people who are saying their business now is moving more and more to out of state. They're Minnesota companies, they want to do business here. But because of all the factors of trying to do business here, they're doing most of their business in South Dakota or other states. We've also heard that. And so we obviously want to make sure we have the kind of quality of life that your comments point to. But we also need to have a climate that is conducive to creating, retaining, growing jobs in this state. And to the extent that we've got issues in our business community, we as a tax committee need to hear that. That's my point.
Thank you. Representative Zeller's closing comments, or anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against this bill, or just weigh in on the whole business climate corporate subsidy issue, like we all just did. Okay. If not, we're going to lay over the show for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax. So thank you, Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, for the thoughtful discussion and the time spent.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to hear from Representative Coles. He's going to do this quick, and then Representative Dabney is going to do his bill after that. We're kind of moving things around here a little bit. Representative Coles moves House File 2990 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 2990 would provide an exemption from the motor vehicle sales tax for vehicles purchased by military personnel who are stationed overseas on federal deployment and bring their vehicles back to Minnesota and register them here for the first time. There are some other states that provide this exemption. I was actually contacted by two separate constituents on this issue in the last year. I had no idea that this was even an issue. If you look at the revenue estimates, it's a fairly modest proposal. It got scored at $30,000 a year. I think this is, you know, we've got a lot of proposals, Madam Chair, about things we can do to make Minnesota a more attractive state for active duty military and veterans. Obviously, the active duty folks don't have much choice in terms of where they're going to live, but we should do what we can. This is a fairly modest proposal. I would encourage the committee's consideration, hopeful inclusion in the bill, Madam Chair. And I appreciate my constituents bringing this issue to me. I think it's one. Again, I've seen a lot of the talk around here about pensions and things like that, and what we can, you know, some of the bigger ticket items. But I think it's important for members of the public as well to know that sometimes they contact us about relatively minor issues in the grand scheme of things, and we take action at times. So I appreciate the committee's consideration of the bill. Would stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Coles. Public testimony on Representative Coles. Representative Coles, thank you for the bill. I actually, when I read it, I thought it made perfect sense to me and seemed only fair. And it is really a small item. But if you're the person buying the car over there and then you're the veteran and then you come back and have to pay the sales tax too, I thought it was a little much. So I appreciate the bill. Are there anyone from the public? Questions from members? If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Coles. Representative Dabney, which one are you doing first? Is he here? Okay, here he is, Representative Dabney. Representative Coles just broke the record there, so you're up. Yeah, he's quick.
Do you want to do these in numerical order?
Whichever you would like.
Why don't we?
So Representative Dabney moves House File 4209. For possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
So I'm sure there's an amendment, and I need to make a verbal verbal amendment to the amendment.
Representative Gavin moves the 760 amendment that's being passed out now, and the oral amendment to it is?
On page 1, line 6 of the amendment, delete and later, and insert 2010 and 2011.
Okay, hang on one second there. So, run all the way to Representative Broad and Zeller don't quite have it yet. And we'll wait just a sec so they can see it. It's an oral amendment to the amendment that you don't have yet. It's the 760 amendment for Representative Dabney, and he's doing an oral amendment on line point 1.6, delete the words and later, and put 2010 and 2011. That's correct, right?
That's
Dabney?
Correct,
does everyone understand the amendment? Questions on the amendment? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Representative Dabney, see your bill.
Madam Chair and members, this bill doesn't belong here.
Yes.
This bill belongs in the K-12 Finance Committee, but this issue came up only very, very recently, and the K-12 Finance Committee has completed its deliberations for the year. It is a tax issue. This is about
the authority of school districts to levy their judgment levy, and it expands that for 3 years to allow them to levy on their property taxes the costs associated with a recent agreement between the Department of Human, Minnesota Department of Human Services and the federal CMS, the nice people who do Medicaid, resulting from an audit done on the local collaborative claim share process. This is something that very few people actually understand. But the bottom line is, and the handout that you've received from memorandum from this show has a at the very end a list of the 32 counties around the state that have to pay back to the federal government a total of something in the neighborhood of $8.3 million. That expense will flow down to the school districts, and this is an attempt for those school districts to capture that revenue from the property taxpayers rather than having to take it out of services to their students. With me today is Mr. Jim Grafwell, representing the Minneapolis Public Schools, but I would again reinforce that this is 60 school districts across the state that will be impacted by this agreement between DHS and CMS.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members, Jim Grafwell, Minneapolis Public Schools. I'd like to thank you, Representative Lintesky, for hearing the bill, and Representative Dabney for carrying the bill. In the most recent handout that's come around, you have a list of the 60 school districts. I guess it's coming around right now.
Okay, so we're going to see this list in just a second, Member.
30
you know, can we, while we're waiting for that, can I just tell you, I want to back up something Representative Dabney said. This bill is, just so the members understand why it's here, is what Representative Dabney said, and Representative Greiling co-authored it to send a message to all of us that she didn't want to hear either, but it's too late, and there is a property tax nexus. So this would normally be K-12 seeing it first, us seeing it last, and so that's why I actually told Representative Dabney, can't we do this next year and have Representative Greiling handle it? And my understanding is that would be too late. So that's why it's here now. So it's a filler so everybody has the list of the school districts that are affected by the proposal in front of us.
And
Madam Chair, just a procedural question.
Sure, Representative Brock.
This one has no state budgetary impact. I'm just wondering, you know, with our new definition over what comes to the tax committee, I'm just wondering if we don't need to see this one either.
Representative Broad, the ones with substantial revenue, not budgetary, that's Ways and Means and Finance, impact must come to the tax committee, and everything else is negotiable. So, you know, this, in my estimation, it should have gone through K-12 first, and so I just want to make sure everyone understands that we're dealing with it. Now, we may choose not to do it in the omnibus tax, but there's no commitment here, obviously, to do it. It's just kind of last attempt here. And as Representative Dabney said, he just learned about it. So, as did I. Mr. Grafwell.
Madam Chair and members, and this is a bit of trifecta of sorts because we're dealing with a DHS, Medicaid reimbursement issue, school districts. So we're dealing with DHS. We're dealing with school districts who can reimburse their administrative costs through this local collaborative time study and get access Medicaid revenue. And we're dealing with an audit by the federal CMS on the overpayment of two school districts through these collaborative family service collaboratives. So we have an audit. We're over. There's been a determination of overpayment that was on appeal. We just found out that appeal was settled, and so there's an $8.3 million liability to be addressed. This legislation proposes allowing school districts to use the judgment levy, that's the third part of the trifecta, taxes, DHS, and education, to pay that obligation back. Okay. So that's the ask.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
I'm Danny.
Just to explain the verbal amendment to the amendment, the reason I asked for that is we drafted the amendment yesterday in an attempt to make this as narrow as possible, and we overshot our goal in limiting it initially to taxes payable only in 2009. because as Ms. Shill's memorandum explains, because of the somewhat extraordinary circumstances here, the DHS will allow the counties to negotiate a three-year payment plan of the reimbursement costs. We're hoping that then, if they in fact engage in that, the counties will turn around and negotiate three-year repayment schedules with the school districts. And so the verbal amendment making the stroke taxes payable 2009, 10, and 11 simply lowers the impact on the property taxpayers by hopefully allowing it to be levied over 3 years rather than all at once. So this is an attempt to, while using judgment levy, make this as minimal a hit on the taxpayers as is possible in this situation.
Okay. Questions for Representative Demme? Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And maybe just to back up, and I got a little bit confused when I got this latest handout on the Medicaid school-based administrative costs. Was somehow was that a proxy as an indicator of how much, is it actually Medicaid administrative costs somehow? I mean, kind of how did we get to this? I mean, what caused the error? Was it a federal regulation that caused the error? Was it school districts that misinterpreted something to be calculated? How did we get to where we're at?
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, Jim Graff, Minneapolis Schools. In 1994, school districts were authorized to bill Medicaid for the administrative cost of providing services under IEPs. And it's explained, so what we're dealing with is administrative costs of health-related services, outreach, some of it detailed in that memo. Then, this local collaborative time study process was the methodology to determine and allocate those costs. DHS came up with a plan, and we followed the plan. The federal CMS audit determined that there were some problems with the DHS plan that we all followed, and they disallowed some of those costs. So school districts are guilty of following the plan our DHS put together and you know, filing all our receipts and following the the time study process, and then the audit revealed a disallowance. So the plan has been fixed, DHS plan now is in compliance with federal CMS regulations, we have this 1 year audit to address. So this is a one-time event. That's why we tried to draft the bill narrowly. Nobody did anything wrong other than follow a plan whose later upon audit was found to have CMS was disallowing some expenditures.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Marquardt?
If this was a statewide plan and almost, I mean, I presume every school has IEPs, why are we just looking at 60 school districts that somehow didn't do this? I mean, how about the other 280-some?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, Jim Graffall again, because 60 were audited. So, and they're not addressing revenue from other districts that weren't audited. They're not imputing anything. The district, so basically, they took a sample of districts, discovered there was a problem, fixed the plan, and the audited districts are the ones addressing the overpayment issue.
So, Madam Chair, so potentially all the districts could have a loss.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I don't believe other unaudited districts have a liability because they are not in the audit.
Representative Marquardt, my guess is if it happens, they'll be back.
Yeah, and I,
Representative Marquardt,
on these type of situations, I don't like things coming back to the property taxpayer. And if it was a statewide situation, then I think the state overall could just come in and deal with this. And I, you know, it was the federal government at fault, but it doesn't sound like it was. I mean, just like with counties, the fact that the feds are not paying up, you know, the counties will ask for more county program aid or something, and I don't think we should be taking care of a problem that's a federal problem, because that only incents the federal government then to pay even less, because the state will pick it up. So that's why if it was more of a statewide, I mean, why couldn't, I'd rather see it go statewide than on some sort of a payment than going back to local property taxpayers.
Representative Marquardt, I want to say that I'm asking Ms. Bergman to try to send an email to Representative DeLaForest. I don't know where he went. But he had the identical reaction you did, Representative Marquardt, when he learned of the proposal from Representative Dabney. So I think there is that issue where folks feel like, why should it be shifted to the property taxpayer? So, you know, we're doing this because it's the last shot, really, today to get those through, but we don't know, you know, really how we'd address this. But I just want, you know, to bipartisanly, that issue has been raised, and I think we kind of feel like we're over a barrel here because we understand the problem. But I wanted Representative DeLaForest to have the opportunity as well to express his concerns that he expressed to some of us yesterday, I think it was, Representative Rod.
Madam Chair, I just maybe it would help to understand what you would have, how you would have paid for it had the cost not been okayed by the federal government. It seems to me that the property taxpayers would have paid for it in the first place. Is that correct? Maybe that. Maybe I'm not understanding it right.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, how we would have paid the overpayment liability?
No, I was just thinking, Madam Chair, that the administrative cost, it seems like you would have had to absorb that anyway.
Well, Representative Broad, I think what I think you're saying is it's DHS's fault, right? Not school, so it probably wouldn't have been a levy.
Well, Madam Chair,
I mean, I'm trying to track, just like you, trying to figure it out. In a perfect world, with all the time in the world, how would the state have addressed this problem?
Well, and I'm trying to take it just a step further in my understanding is that if the schools were allowed to charge back or to charge the administrative costs, it sounded like that was something new in that allowance. And if it was something new, then the way you must have done it previously is you had to internalize the cost, so you would have, as the school district, had to pick up the cost. Is that how it works?
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the authority in 1994 allowed us to access Medicaid to reimburse administrative costs for delivering a variety of services. And you have to understand, since we've all been in school, we're providing a lot more medical services than, and so it was the administrative costs associated with that. So if we did not have access to Medicaid, we would have just been eating that out of our own budget. If we don't have, we came up with the levy notion, and would we rather have a bag of state cash or federal cash? You know, I think all school districts would say yes, vote aye. We were looking for a solution that looked like something that would be achievable in this session, because it looks like the liability is going to show up shortly, and we were hoping to not take it out of the classroom, essentially.
Madam Chair, that's the link I was trying to make, is that your taxpayers essentially would have had to pick it up in the first place had you not had the opportunity to access that money, because it would have been part of your budget. So I can see the link, and that's right. The link I was trying to put on the table. I just did it very poorly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. We're just trying to figure out what we're going to deal with for us, but, because we're wrapping it up here, but if he made it down, I wanted to get his comments on the record. But Mr. Graffel.
And Madam Chair, Representative Broad, or it would have been an internal reallocation. We have a lot of that with special education, so it may not have been a levy issue. You know, there's many pressures on a school district budget, but yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. We are ill-equipped, once again, to deal with K-12 and Department of Human Services issues, but there is a tax issue, so here we are. Anyone from the public who wants to testify for or against this bill? If not, here he is. Just going to lay it over. Let's do it for us so you know what's going on here. We're just talking about this judgment levy issue with the schools, and Representative Marquardt raised the issue about why not make the state pay instead of shifting it to the folks locally, and Representative Broad is kind of doing that too, and I was just expressing the committee that you shared some similar concerns, so if you wanted to comment, we're going to lay it over, but we're kind of feeling like we're in a little box here. I don't know how much you recall this.
No, thank you for coming. You got me out of a phone call. I didn't want to address anyway, so I can defer that for at least a few minutes, but I did. I had similar concerns. It sounds like there's some kind of judgment out there, and I'm just not convinced that the taxpayers are the right ones to pay. I mean, it sounds like a damages type of issue here. And I'm just wondering, I asked Representative Dabney, we had a conversation about what does our federal delegation say about this, and what does the state say about it. And I just
I just want to make sure we don't rush to judgment and look to the taxpayers first and foremost to pay these damages, I guess. And I certainly had a concern, as well it sounds, Representative Dabney and Madam Chair, if my memory serves me correctly, that this is spread across a number of school districts. This is not unique to the Minneapolis Public Schools, for example. So I'd also wanted to try and get a handle with respect to who's affected by this, and do we have dollar amounts, et cetera, et cetera. Although that wouldn't change my analysis, whether or not, for example, a school district I represent is affected or not. Doesn't change my concern that I hope that we look to other solutions besides coming back to the beleaguered taxpayers. As we all know, we have an issue with school levies already for operations, and et cetera, et cetera. So, Madam Chair, thanks for allowing me an opportunity to sound my concerns as well.
And Representative Zelaforce, I think you probably are. There's a list. I think you're in there. They did provide it, but I just wanted folks to, I just really wanted to get on the record that the committee is sort of struggling with this, and I know that it's late and it's urgent, but, you know, there's not a commitment here to actually do this. We have to think carefully. So I just want you to be aware there's bipartisan concerns, but we understand that, you know, you're in a pinch. But Representative Dabney is, yes. And again, Representative DeForest, it doesn't change his analysis. He's that's right. Okay, so anyone from the public, anyone who would like to speak about, yes, okay, please come forward.
Madam Chair, Committee Member Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we do just want to go on the record in strong support of this. We thank Representative Dabney for bringing it forward. And I will assure you that we did exhaust every other avenue. When we first found out about this just a few months ago at the school district level, our first thought was, let's go to the congressional delegation, see if we can get an intervention there. In the meantime, we also talked to DHS and asked at the state level and talked to some folks on the Human Services Committee and said we don't think there should be a fall on the backs of the school district, should be a state. Well, since then, the state has settled the case with the federal government, so that's a done deal now. The state has this liability. Now it's a matter of who pays for it, counties or school districts, and this is basically our last option. As Mr. Grappa pointed out, if we don't do this, then it's going to come out of the classroom and other areas. So with that, I'll stop. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Anyone else? If not, Representative LaForce.
You know, here we go again, whether or not it's unfunded special ed things, whether or not it's No Child Left Behind. I certainly hope, Mr. Kronquist, that we get, please send me a letter that updates the unfunded mandates that the Anoka-Hennepin School District deals with now, because it just added to the total again. And that deeply, deeply disappoints me that the vast majority of the levies that we pass, in fact, would be unnecessary if the federal government would cover its own damn mandates. And it's unfair that these, now I'm on my soapbox, and I don't often get on one, as you know. But it really does bother me that these school board members go around and get the tar kicked out of them for levies, and it's not their bill. It's not their bill to pay, but they get stuck with trying to convince the voters to run. We've got these congressional-style campaigns that need to be run, et cetera, to pass levies that simply cover the cost of unfunded mandates that are heaped upon our local schools. So please send me a letter that gives me the updated total in red ink so I can share that with my constituents. Thank you.
Thank you for that. We all need to use our soapbox when we're compelled. So thank you for that. Okay, so we're going to lay this. Yeah, oh, he was. I don't know where he went. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Now Representative Dabney is going to move. House File 4210, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In members' packets, they should find the H4210A1 amendment. I'd like to move that, and I would actually ask Mr. Michael to please speak to it.
Representative Dabney moves the A1 amendment. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this amendment addresses situations that periodically arise in administering the tax increment law. There are currently, that I'm aware of, two instances, one in Hennepin County and one in Grant County, where as a result of some kind of miscommunication or some misunderstanding, there was an error in certifying or decertifying the district. And what this does is it gives authority to the county to correct those errors by recertifying or correcting the certification for a later tax year and then adjusting the duration so the increment is the appropriate amount of increment. Before doing that, they would most often these instances are brought to the county's attention by the city, but if it was done, if the county was doing this sort of on its own, or in any case, it would need to notify the city of doing so, and if the city disagrees, then there's a procedure for, you know, not for resolving that. And then finally, the county, when they take action, would be required to notify the Commissioner of Revenue and the state auditor of the questions that are made.
Thank you. Representative Abney. Oh, first, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Abney for the full bill now.
Thank you, and I will speak to the original part of the bill, the homeless TIF district, which is not a TIF district found under bridges, but is an area in Minneapolis. And this really is just a technical change. If this is the boundaries of the TIF district, when the area of the TIF district was calculated, whoever did it subtracted the area represented by roads and sidewalks. And the area of the district indicated in statute was that area. Unfortunately, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to include the area included by streets and sidewalks. So we're simply asking for a correction. We're not asking to change the boundaries of the district, the duration of the district, any of those, you know, funky TIF things that people try to do. This really is simply correcting an error in statute.
Okay, questions for Representative Abney? Anyone want to testify for or against? I think this one's pretty straightforward. Okay. If not, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the honest tax bill. Thank you for that, Representative Abney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
You know, members, we're going to hear Representative Bunn's bill next, but I do want to thank, take 1 second to ask Mr. Nye to join us at the table here, because committee members do not know that our page, who's been diligently working for us all year, very hard, is leaving us after today.
Yes.
So we want to correctly and appropriately thank you for all you've done for us. We really do appreciate it. And if you wouldn't mind telling us, Mr. Nye, why you're leaving us and where you're going.
Well, Madam Chair and members, for the record, I've never done this before. So my name is Josh Nye. I am a committee page for the taxes committee. I was hired a couple of weeks, two weeks ago actually today, to be a legislative coordinator for healthcare, labor, and pension issues at a state government issue management firm in Washington, D.C. And I am leaving Monday morning to start that venture.
We really appreciate all you've done for all of us and for the state and all your service, and you've really been a great help, and we just want to take a moment to thank you and wish you well. So thank you, Mr. Nye. Representative Broad.
I want to also thank Mr. Nye and the other pages. As a minority member, we have always been treated with excellence by you guys, and I truly appreciate your service. And once again, Madam Chair, here we are exporting one of our greatest goods, which is our people.
What is my goal? Hopefully to be sitting on that side of the table in a few years.
I would just urge Mr. Nye to make himself sign in.
Yes. Oh, yes. Mr. Nye is in the minutes, and he'll be signing it. And again, we really do appreciate it. You've worked so hard for all of us.
It was a good experience. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, with that, Representative Bunn. And members, this bill was posted this morning, and this I want to take a second. Representative Bunn worked with me on this bill last night, I think it was after midnight on the floor when we were trying to work this through, and I just have to take a minute and thank, of course, all the staff, both partisan and non, who worked to pull this off by this committee today. And Ms. Baker came in this morning, I understand, and wrote a summary of the bill, which is being handed out now. And this came to Representative Bunn very recently, and I told her, like I tell everyone, you got to get a bill in. So this is the day. So she is here now, and so I will move. I don't even have the number. House File 4201 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you very much for this opportunity. This bill is addressing an issue that relates to this larger issue that we're all facing throughout the state and the nation. It's a consequence of the downturn in the economy, the collapse of the housing market, the subsequent collapse of new home construction in our state, etc. And it's a little different twist on us. We've been dealing with committees with foreclosure issues and other implications of this crisis that we're in. But this is a new issue. I come from an area that has a variety of urban, suburban, old towns like Stillwater and some ex-urban type rural, quasi-former agriculture areas. So it's a real mix in my community. This issue came from a particular gentleman who, a longtime resident of Baytown Township, which is just south of Stillwater, east of Lake Elmo, between Lake Elmo and the St. Clair River. Farmland that had been in the family for a long period of time. Someone who planned to, as so many people do in our very close-in areas that are now developing, to retire with his by platting his land and moving and selling land and using that for his retirement legacy. What is happening in these communities is we have a situation in this state where we allow once land is platted, return from ag land or open land to platted land, that before 2001, throughout the entire state, there was a three-year phase-in between the pre-tax value and the new assessed value of that land to phase it in while people are actually developing it and trying to sell it over a period of time. They don't sell it immediately, so they're not immediately assessed at the new higher value, the post-plat value. In 2001, it was argued, and if you were here at that time and remember what the arguments were, we'd love to hear them because we haven't been able to quite reconstruct what happened in 2001. But in 2001, it was argued before the non-seven county metro that 3 years was not a long enough period of time. And in fact, it took much longer than that to move land, to sell platted land. And so the phase-in was changed to a seven-year phase-in, that once you platted, the difference between that pre-plat and the plat assessed value was phased in one-seventh, one-seventh, one-seventh over the 7 years until it reached its full valuation, and that's how you were assessed for property taxes. What's happened in the metro area, the seven-county metro area, in the last several years, really since the early 2000s, is that people are not moving their land within 3 years. They are platting their land, their assessed value is being phased in, and they're not moving their properties very fast. And right now, nothing is pretty much moving at all. And that will probably be the case for a number of years going forward. So we have individuals like this person in my district who platted his land, 28 lots, and over these last couple years, only five have sold in that time period. So he's sitting on these 23 lots that are not moving, but now he's already moved up to the full assessed value. This individual has $11,000 a year of Social Security income, and to pay the property tax on these properties, he has completely exhausted and liquidated his IRA, which is something of over $100,000. So he has used his other retirement savings to pay property taxes over these years. And because liquidation of IRA goes on your 1040 as income, he's not able to do, you know, senior circuit breakers or other programs for seniors to give them some property tax relief related to their income at all. He didn't qualify for that because of having to liquidate IRAs to pay property tax. It shows up as income. So here we have an individual who's exhausting his retirement savings in order to pay property taxes on land, which really is simply kind of worthless at this point because he just can't sell it. In this time period, he's also, you know, lowered the price of this land considerably to try to unload it over this, and nothing has moved. More recently, in this area and in other areas, I'm sure around the 7 County metro, there also have been some downward readjustments in the assessed values, but still not significant compared to the property tax burden folks like him are carrying. So given this particular situation, we explored a number of issues around these type of folks were experiencing, what was really fair in terms of the 7 County metro versus the outstate, in addressing this issue. And what we conclude in terms of the legislation before you today as a approach to addressing this is essentially a fairly simple thing, that there are more complex ways that we explored that didn't seem to be able to workable. And I want to draw your attention to Section 2 of the bill first. Essentially what it does is just creates the metro area the same way as outdate, that things really are not moving in a three-year time period and being sold, and so we would move to a seven-year phase-in for property tax assessment from the pre-plat to the platted assessment. Section 3 then just repeals the old three-year for the seven-county metro, and I start with those because that's fairly simple to explain. Section 1, what that does is it addresses, well, what about those folks that are currently between 1 and 7? They're either between the 1 and 3, or in my individual case, just beyond the 3, just reached the kind of max assessed value. And how do we treat them with regard to providing them some relief? And what Section 1 does essentially is readjust them. It takes them wherever they are from the 1 to 7 years, basically goes back to the pre-plat value, and then divides that into 7 increments for adjustment. And if they happen to be in the 4 years, then they'd be 4/7. You know, they're 4 of those 1/7. And that would be their new adjustment at this point. And so for my individual's case, rather than being at full assessed value for those lots this coming year, he would bounce back to kind of being in the 4th year of the 7-year phase-in. So it readjusts him downward again. There wouldn't be any retroactive refunding his property tax to anyone. It would just reassess them moving forward in doing this. Now, I will raise the issue up front is one thing in discussion with if this committee wants to take it up. Depending on how one looks at the foundation for the argument for this, if it is somewhat related to the economy issue as to whether or not the 7-county metro in the longer term should be a 3 versus 7, one could also put a sunset on this and say, for 7 years out. And we do have some amendment language if that's of interest to people, either now or later on when you're dealing with it as you're developing the tax bill, to make this only for a 4-year period, assuming that the economy is going to turn around in that period and go back to a regime on a more steady basis going forward. But that's the issue that this is trying to address. I'd be glad to take questions. Kevin Corbett, who's in charge of property taxes for Washington County, is here. He's not here to testify, but has interest in this, and we've been in ongoing conversations with him about this. But we're glad he might be able to answer questions if you have them. But also, I know that there's someone from Ramsey County assessors who would like to speak to this at some point.
Okay, so process-wise, just to be clear, this is the one exception that was posted so late that folks may not have been able, obviously, to know about it. So when we do omnibus, if it's in there, we'll take testimony there, and we encourage anyone who knows of anyone who might have an interest in this to let us know. And the reason I decided to go ahead and do this, Representative Fun also spoke to Representative Marquardt on the floor, and it seemed to me, and I don't have the history, Mr. Michael was going to find out who the author was of the 2001 bill, and we're all just guessing. It was probably a rural member. It was a good idea. They did it for rural Minnesota. We don't really know why they didn't do it in the metro. But what persuaded me to just at least give us the ability to think through if we want to do this is an understanding, you know, there's shifting things, so we have to think it through. If Representative Anderson in Property Tax Division, and some of us were here to hear it, Representative Lanning and Dahmer and I, gave, you know, quite a compelling speech about Wright County and kind of what, you know, how do you deal with us, and there's this series of newspaper stories that have been running in her area about all these platted lands that aren't moving and properties that aren't selling, and she was actually addressing a foreclosure grant item in Representative Marquardt's bill. And she was saying, you know, what about kind of everybody else? And actually, as I listened to Representative Bond, I started thinking, this is probably something Representative Anderson would be really interested in. So I thought we should at least hear it, because if we didn't hear it, we wouldn't be able to address it yet this year. So. Questions for Representative Fun or Representative Lanning and Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a couple questions for staff. If I understand this correctly, current law says that in Greater Minnesota, the assessors shall give 7 years.
Ms. Baker.
And current law with regard to Metro says what?
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, current law is 7 years for the metro area, or 7 years for Greater Minnesota, and 3 years for Metro.
Representative Lanning.
And as far as we know, those are guidelines that the revenue has been following in terms of their enforcement, working with assessors.
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, yes, because it's very, very clear in law that the assessor determines that value and then phases that thing in one-third at a time or one-seventh at a time.
So I
don't think that that is an assessment issue at all.
Okay.
I really don't.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That takes care of one set of questions. The other set of questions I would have for Representative Bunn, I don't see anything in here that factors in whether or not there have been special assessments that have been put on the land and what happens with those. What I fear in a situation like this is if we give property tax relief, which you have a good strong argument for, if land is sitting vacant, not moving after it's been platted, but I have a concern for what if special assessments are not being paid by the owners of those properties that should be paying them, and in which case the local unit of government is stuck with making bond payments on any infrastructure that was put in the ground to service those lots. And can you speak to that issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I would ask in a few minutes when Ramsey County and possibly the person from Washington County would like to speak there as well. In the particular instance that I'm aware of in my area, in my county, these lots are not receiving city services. This particular situation, it's a this development would be served by a communal septic provided by the landowner who platted it, and also they are on well water. So there is not a city. So I don't know what special assessments would pertain in this case.
Okay, Ms. Baker.
But in general, you're right. There were the other issues that would be relevant, and so we do need to get an answer to that question.
Ms. Baker, you want to comment on that, Representative Lanning's question?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, this bill does not do anything different with special assessments. So special assessments would still be due, and if not paid, they'd become a lien on the property. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't affect them.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't want to give a property tax break to a parcel mm-hmm. when the specials are not getting paid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we can put some language amendment in this bill that would address that issue, but to give someone a break on the one hand and then they're not paying their special assessments on the other is going to adversely affect local units of government, municipalities, or whoever has levied the special assessment. So I don't know what the fix might be in terms of language that would address that, but I would encourage that to be looked at.
Okay, thank you for that. And Mr. Michael? Mr. Michael, follow me after the bill. Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, I did not look to see whether this was originated in the House or the Senate. It was a bill that was introduced by Senator Samuelson in the Senate and Representative Wenzel in the House.
Yeah. Okay, so now we've got the history there. Still doesn't tell us what they're up to, but we really know who they are. So, okay, so testifiers, anybody want to come on down on Representative
Broad?
Yep.
I actually just had a question maybe for Ms. Baker, Mr. Michael, or Mr. Heinz. I'm trying to understand what the current law says related to transfers of property. So the situation that Representative Brunn brings out is that there hasn't been any transfers, or I'm not hearing about any transfers of the lots themselves. When I read this, this doesn't take any. If one of the lots are sold, do they still then have that second phase in? How does it actually work?
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the only thing that causes this value to increase is when construction begins. Mm-hmm. So there is no relationship to transfer. So if I bought one of these lots and that lot just sat there for a year or two and I didn't do any construction on it, the value would not be raised, or it would be phased in the same way that the law allowed it. But it wouldn't cancel it or anything. It's just when I start construction, then the value would be adjusted. And I think the assessor can probably, give you an example or or confirm that, but that's really what would trigger it.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes, that's
right. Just to follow up, that's how I was reading it, but it seems to me that if there's a transfer from one property owner to another, you've secured a market value on the property, and that market value should be based on market if it's an arm's length transaction. So it just seems to me that that should trigger the taxes, as opposed to that person, even if they don't build the house. I mean, we've owned some lots for a long time, have really not a lot of plans to build on them, but, you know, I bought them at market value. I probably ought to pay the taxes at market value. It just seems to me that that might be something that we'd want to consider as well in terms of a transfer of property if it's arm's length.
Ms. Baker. Madam Chair, Representative Bride, I mean, that's a policy change to the current platting law, which, you know, would affect all plats that are out there, if in fact you wanted to do that. But currently, that is not part of the platting law, so.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
Representative Broadmore, or no? Okay, so testifiers, our testifier, is ever coming down? Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Stephen Baker, the Ramsey County Assessor, and a member of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers Legislative Committee, and I'm also currently the Region Director serving on the Executive Board of the Association for the metro area. I think, you know, my comments today from the perspective of assessors on this, and I've had an opportunity to speak with Representative Vaughn just before the meeting today. And this was a kind of a surprise to us too. I just heard about it this morning, so
it's a surprise for us all.
Yeah. You know, I think from our perspective, it's probably something you've heard from us before, is the difficulties in administering changes in programs like this, particularly the programming changes, the computer changes that are required. Also, what we see with plat law now is even in the three-year window, we have a lot of administrative issues with the plat law where something changes in the property. It's replatted or some other event occurs that kind of brings into question the appropriateness of the continuing of the plat law or how it relates to the property. And I would envision that if we extend that to 7 years, those kinds of issues are going to grow. But I think more substantially are concerns about the I know Representative Bunn doesn't think it's retroactive. I guess from my perspective, it seems retroactive when we're not maybe in tax, but in terms of assessed values, when we're going to go back to 2008 to 2009 and put back on a plat law on properties that potentially sunsetted 3 years ago. There's going to be some challenge even identifying those properties, and then it'll further be filtering out which ones have been improved already and so no longer qualify, those kinds of issues. So. And then we've got the timing of that, especially if we move up TNT this year, getting the programming changes done, getting the properties identified, getting these changes done this year is potentially problematic. So, you know, I guess if this is going to be included in the omnibus bill, we'd like to see at least some changes in subdivision 14C or potentially some language, and maybe we can have some discussions around that. And. But otherwise, I think, and then I would point out that there are many other platted pieces of vacant properties that do pay full tax. They don't that pay tax on the full value. So it's just as these newly platted parcels that benefit from this statute.
Okay, so Mr. Baker, I think your point from you made some good points there, Representative Broad, and Representative Lanning did as well. So I think, you know, staff can see if they can work something there. You know, the rural folks are doing it, so I'm certain,
you know, I think
you'd be able to do it. So,
Madam
Mr. Baker.
I think the statute we have now has been working in the metro area for as long as I've been in assessing, which is like 19 years. I think we've had the three-year plat. I wasn't that involved in the discussions at the time that we changed it in the rural areas and why it's different. My sense was it was likely that in the metro counties we felt that most lots were being absorbed in that three-year window, and so there was not a need to really extend it beyond 7 years at that time. But
Mr. Baker, I think that's why Representative Hunt's here.
Yeah.
I would guess that's exactly what people thought, but we're in a whole new housing economy, so I think that's what's, and I, again, for the few of us that got to listen to Representative Anderson, she helped us all recall what's happening, not, you know, in areas like her. So,
yeah.
You know, but I appreciate the technical changes that might be necessary, yeah. And Representative Broad, Lanning, and Friesen as well.
And Madam Chair, I would point out that Wright County is not included in the definition of metro counties for purposes of this bill.
Already has a 7-year phase in Wright County.
Wright County.
They're in better shape than these areas I'm talking about.
Oh.
They are under the 7-year phase.
So she's already got the 7-year and she's got the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, then it tells you the 3-year probably isn't quite getting it there. So she's got it even with the 7-year. Okay. Thank you for that. Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, I guess my only thing in support of this is it is falling into a current system that we have. I mean, it's not like we're creating something new and we've got 7 years in rural Minnesota. And I know there would be some concerns with the assessments on that, but I think we can, you know, work those out and so forth. So, I mean, I think this is a good approach to try to address that, especially when, you know, I think one of the things that we need to do as a committee and the legislature is to react to when certain things happen, the economy or housing or whatever. So I think it's a good effort.
Okay. Further testimony? Further questions? You know, I should have known where Wright County is. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking there. I was too tired, but I kind of think of her as just on. I guess she is kind of the first county out, isn't she? Is that right? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else? If not, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the honest tax. So thank you. Again, thank you, Ms. Baker, really, for all the work you did this morning to make that hearing even possible.
Yeah, and so let me add to that. Thank you so much to staff, Ms. Baker and Mr. Hines this morning and also the last 2 weeks. We really pulled this together about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, and did a lot of work to come up with the approach to do this. Thank you.
And I'm going to lay that over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I'm just going to stay right here, and I'm going to move House File 2104 for Representative Dill, who spoke to me at 1 in the morning, and asked if somebody would do something so he could go home. And I don't recall what Representative Marquardt and I said, if I was doing his bill or he was. Okay, well, Representative Marquardt, to the bill for Representative Dill. This is the Cook County Lodging and Admissions Tax. We were so tired, we also had some confusion if we heard this one in committee last year. And we thought, you know, because we've been saying if you had it heard last year and it didn't happen, you don't have to hear it heard again, you can be considered for the tax bill. And then I think Representative Dill thought, it was actually kind of hysterical, because he said, well, I think it was vetoed, but he wasn't sure. And so we were also tired. We couldn't quite remember. So maybe Ms. Baker or Ms. Dalton or someone can actually tell us about Representative Dill's bill. Ms. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I think it's somewhat ironic here that I will present his
local
what did I do wrong last night? I don't know. But
Madam Chair. I didn't see them in here, but I'm wondering if there's any changes to migratory duck hunting season, the waterfall. I'm just curious.
Representative Zellers, I am so glad you brought that up. I wanted to pass out the letter from Trout Unlimited, but the committee's not here, and I will give it to Representative Dill, and they absolutely have huge issues with that amendment. So, we won't get into migratory fall, but Trout Unlimited... that's the problem late at night with strange amendments and a full study. So we did, I should thank the staff who then worked after that hearing to contact all the right people in the DNR to get the information. So I wanted to make that public here, but Representative Dill's not even here. So we'll get to that on Monday. But thank you, Representative Dillers.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
You know, you're kind of fortunate right now that you have a minority here. And that we don't have the rule book of the North Shore people, because right now I think we could have a lot of fun making a lot of things happen. And I'd like to thank the rural members, Representative Marquardt Representative Coonan, for being here, because it was one of the concerns was on a Friday, the rural guys all want to go home. So I'd like
Absolutely.
To make note that I don't see just too many metro legislators sitting around this table.
And I completely, and you know, we need to get that in a minute. It was noted by Representative Simpson that the metro members were not here on a Friday, and the Democrats weren't here really either. And you know what? That is so funny, because remember we had that discussion after the last committee, should we meet after the floor on Thursday, and everyone said, nah, Friday morning.
But who thought this would play out that way? Representative Brock.
Madam Chair, I hadn't looked around, but since Representative Simpson pointed it out, I have an amendment to the bill. I think a 0.5 tax cut tax on the lowest bracket might be in
Representative Brock.
All those in favor.
That is great. No, and so, but seriously, we will pass out this information for the late night on the Trout Amendment that Representative Bill brought forward. So we will take this bill seriously now and hear from Ms. Dalton what Representative Bill has got before us. Ms. Dalton?
First of all, I want to say that this was not heard last year. This was put in on the Senate side during the conference committee. But I am going to, if that's all right with Ms. Dalton, to explain the bill and some of the few new items here that you
So staff was right when we were talking about this a few days ago, and they said, we don't think we ever heard it. So now we're hearing it now. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. The bill in front of you has essentially two new taxes. The first one is a 1 cent lodging tax imposed by the County of Cook. There's a general lodging tax of 3% allowed under statutory authority, but that's for cities and towns. So this would be a 1% over and above that. And then Subdivision 2 has an admission and recreation tax, which is a 3% tax on admissions to entertainment, recreational facilities, and rental of recreation equipment. And the proceeds from both of these taxes would go to a new Cook County Events and Visitors Bureau to promote tourism in the entire county.
Okay. Ms. Dalton, can you tell me, separate from this committee, but when we had in conference committee and the bill was vetoed, and then we had another bill this year earlier, we had a number of items that the governor requested come out. And at that time, I told all the authors bipartisanly I would commit to putting them back in. Is this the identical bill, or are there changes to the bill that, and for everybody trying to remember here, in March when the governor signed federal conformity, he signed the Duluth local option sales, and he signed the MIGI, but he held off North Mankato and the rest, and he wouldn't sign those at that time, and they were conference committee, and this was in the conference committee, but came, now we've heard, didn't get heard in the House. What I now want to know is this identical to what made it into the House tax bill twice? Or is it an extension, or is it larger?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is a variation.
So it's not the exact same. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, what was in the Senate omnibus bill actually consisted of three parts. It consisted of an extension of the county's general sales tax, a change in the use of the existing local sales tax in a three-town area, which was the Toffee-Lutzen area, which currently that money is being used to fund the Superior National Shores Golf Course, and that was going to be changed, and that money was going to go, those bonds were going to then be paid out of the extension of the local sales tax, and then there was this county tax. So how much of it,
Okay. Appreciate that. Questions for the bill, Representative Simpson. Simpson sat through all that, so see, it's hard to remember it all, isn't it?
Right.
Okay, Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess it would be interesting to know, does Cook County want this, or this playbook? Chapter 42.
Well, I don't know. Is anyone from Cook County here? Anyone from the public here want to testify on that? No. Okay. I do want to be clear that I had made a commitment bipartisanly to all the authors when the governor said take them out for now. I put them back. And that's why I want to be clear that, and I don't support any of them, but that was a negotiated agreement, that this was the exact same one, and my understanding is not the exact same one. So I just want to be clear what I'm talking to Representative Bill and Senator Bach. So, I don't know, and that's the right question to ask. And when the omnibus tax bill is unveiled on Monday, if it's in there, then we'll be able to ask Representative Bill all those questions, and we'll certainly let Cook County tell us what they think about it. So are there other questions? Okay. Oh, Representative Demmer.
Well, again, just so I understand, Madam Chair, they already have a 3% local lodging tax. So this is in another 1% on top, in addition to 2% in these three towns. So in the three towns, they'd have 6% plus another 3-9% possibly. Am I understanding right?
It is confusing.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, essentially that's why there was a connection of, there were three different things that were going on in the Senate omnibus bill. This provision does say that the total tax in any given area cannot exceed 4%, which would mean that you couldn't impose, either you couldn't impose this tax in a place that has 5%, which is the Tossie area, or the Tossie tax would have to be reduced, would have to be eliminated, so that you only have 4% in that area.
So, Ms. Dalton, if I pursued a statewide lodging tax to pay for the Mall of America, as I threatened, they couldn't do this because they'd actually, that would put them past the cap, right, Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
That was an aside. I apologize.
Okay, so again, I'm being a little dense here, but I'll use the late hour as my excuse. With the existing 2% lodging tax in these three communities, Lutzen, Schrader, and Tossie, and in addition to that, there's a 3%, so they have 5% now. Is that right?
Ms. Dalton, and Ms. Dalton, can you frame that up for folks on what generally kind of statewide, not just Tossie, I mean, there's a lot of areas in lodging that have layers. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I would actually have to go back and take a look at the original Lutzen-Schroeder-Tossie language. What was unique about their tax was that instead of having 95% of it having to go to tourism purposes, it was dedicated to paying off the bonds for this golf course. I don't remember if that tax was an addition to the 3%. Not all cities or towns impose a 3% under the general authority. They have that authority, but I'm not sure they do. This might have been a substitution for 2 cents out of those three in that language, but I'd have to go back and look at the original Lutzen, Schroeder, Tossie language.
Justin Bremer.
Okay, so the 3% is actually an authorization, but not necessarily imposed.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
And so, Madam Chair, the 1% addition is on top, so it basically increases it from a 3 to a 4. Am I right on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, that is correct. What's kind of unique about this is right now, as I said, that general 3% authority is for cities and towns, and they may do it together as a joint powers board or something like this. This would be the first countywide lodging tax that would be authorized.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Anyone for or against? Any comments? Representative Simpson?
Question. Ms. Dalton, are there other countywide lodging taxes in the state of Minnesota?
Ms. Dalton. Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the honest tax. So thank you for that. And I'm going to stay right here and move House File 4204. And Representative, or members, this is my bill to increase the maximum HRA levy. So this really is an effort to let the HRAs levy more than they've been able to. I have to tell you honestly, I looked at the revenue estimate and I asked Mr. Michael, I raised it 74%. And he said, you told me what you wanted to do, and I told you that, you know, that was too high, and he lowered it a little bit for me. I guess I really wanted it at 100 when I said on the phone. So I think that's probably too high for some members to understand. It was a phone conversation a long time ago. And this was the bill that we referenced when I asked what happened to that bill I had and it was lost that day. This is it. So, and it keeps getting moved down the calendar, so we're here to take it up now. But I think the point of my bill, members, really is HRAs have not, they've been stuck at a certain levy limit forever. Not forever, but it's been a long time. And their needs are greater because they've lost eminent domain, except in some select circumstances, PIF has been compressed as school districts have been pulled out. And, you know, we've been trying to, you know, move away from some of the things that aren't as favorable in economic development and needs in communities for local units of government, and get them to do, in my estimation, things like this and use abatements as opposed to some of the other tools. So some of the ways they've been doing some of the things aren't as lucrative as they used to be, and I thought since the HRA levy had been raised a long time, it was time. But I've raised it too much, so I'm open to anybody who has a thought on how we might want to think through it, and this would be statewide. So that's the bill, and I guess I have a couple testifiers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Kevin Wally, and I'm representing the Minnesota NARO, which is the Association for the Housing and Redevelopment Officials, and we appreciate this piece of legislation. We support it. We were a bit surprised at your generosity as well. But we do feel strongly that it's an important tool to help housing and redevelopment authorities bring more resources to bear to play a larger role, frankly, in addressing the problems that are arising from the mortgage foreclosure crisis. And both on the prevention side, to provide refinancing tools to help keep people in their homes, and on the cure side, if you will, to develop programs that improve or restore vacant houses and to provide down payment assistance to people to occupy those houses. And there's a strong preference in all the communities to see that we have home ownership objectives for these abandoned properties, and I think the HRA is going to be in a much better position as they have some additional resources to address these needs. There are a couple of technical issues we just want to raise with respect to the scope of the bill. One is some folks asked that we address the question of whether special law HRAs as well as general law HRAs would be afforded this opportunity, and I would address that to staff, and I'd raise it as an issue maybe to bring up after the hearing. And then there's a change to the base year that's provided here, and there's a question raised about the look back that would be provided by virtue of striking the language on lines 1.23 and 1.24. And so those are questions I'd like to talk with staff about before this goes into the final bill. But thank you very much for this piece of legislation. We think this is a very important step in order to make HRAs more of a player in trying to address some of the problems that have emerged due to mortgage foreclosures.
Thanks for that, Mr. Wally. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and we just wanted to thank you for bringing this bill forward. You've done a wonderful job of laying out the very issues that we have as cities in trying to work on housing and redevelopment issues for our communities. What you put forward in this bill certainly gives us a little more flexibility in that area, and we'd encourage you to do what you need to on that number as you put together your omnibus bill.
Thank you for that. Further testifiers for or against this bill? What thoughts? Mr. Zamboy, welcome.
Thank you very much, okay. Madam Chair and members. My name is Louis Jamboy. I'm with Metro Cities, and I took to heart, Madam Chair, what you said about, you know, testifying or not in a public public setting. So I don't want to wear out my welcome, but I want to make sure I speak up if that's what we are supposed to do, and we think that's a good idea anyway, I guess. We support your bill, Madam Chair. The Met Council has housing targets for affordable housing that cities are asked to meet. Those targets are very, very aggressive. It's very difficult for cities to meet those housing targets. Any tools available to help cities meet those are welcome. We always try to point out the other side of the game, which is that affordable housing is a societal issue, and we believe it needs a response from the federal, state, regional, local level, and the builder level as well. We're all sort of in it together, but we very much support your bill, and we hope it passes at whatever level.
Thank you, Mr. Zamboy. Mr. Michael, can you just address the special law general HRAs that Mr. Wally raised, and maybe how the committee, because I'm just open here, members, the downside of the bill is obviously a property tax increase, and I think we all get that when you let a levying entity levy more. So I'm just trying to think of how, within the scope of needs, this could obviously need a smaller number, but the general law versus special law issue that Mr. Wally raised, could you comment on that? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we'd have to We'd have to review individual special laws to determine what the effect would be. I can imagine that some of them are just tied to whatever the authority is under the general statute, in which case this would increase them. But if they have a special law that directly specifies what their limit is, then they would not benefit from this new higher limit. If you wanted to do that, you could add to it another provision that says that the higher limit applies notwithstanding any limit in their special law, if you wanted to grant that higher limit to even special laws that have their own specific limits.
Okay, thank you for that. Any further questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that this does not change what the money can be used for, but could we have a brief review from staff as to, under current law, what can the levy be used for by housing and redevelopment agencies?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, my understanding is that they can use that money to essentially deposit into their general fund, which can go for, I think, virtually any of the purposes that the Housing and Redevelopment Authority operate under, but that's not something off the top of my head that I know of. Somebody from that represents those authorities has, you know, sort of a different view that they should speak up.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, I'm certainly open to this, but I think we all ought to be clear as to what it can be used for. If we're going to significantly increase the levy, then we need to make sure we understand what it can be used for. And I know it can be used for a range of housing initiatives. I'm not sure what the limits to that are, private versus public housing. I know it can be used for some economic development projects, redevelopment projects. I'm not clear about, right off the top of my head, what the limits might be. We need to know that if this is going to be in the final bill.
And Representative Lanning, I would guess that all of us who are aware of our local HRA projects would all have completely different kinds of things going on in our own community, so that's a point well taken. Further questions? With that, I'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I just want to say one last thing before we adjourn, because this is our last set of hearings now, and we'll have the omnibus tax bill on Monday, and I'll thank the staff in advance who will be here all weekend. So I do want to try to get a list, a general list of the bills that will be in the omnibus tax bill to everyone on the committee, either really late today, and I don't know if that's possible, or tomorrow via email, so that people can just see it. They obviously won't have language and numbers, but this goes in or out. And this, so that Monday we'll have more time, and we won't mark it up till Tuesday. So look for your something in your email. And particularly we'll try to give Representative Simpson and Representative Lanning as the lead the call on kind of, you know, what we're thinking. But I just don't think staff can actually get a full bill ready before Monday, so we'll try to unveil it on Monday, mark it up Tuesday. We'll take public testimony Tuesday morning, go to session, and then try to mark it up. So that way people will have from kind of late today or Saturday morning to think about amendments through, you know, all the way till Tuesday. So there should be plenty of time for drafting and discussion and that kind of stuff. So with that, we are Representative Simpson.
What time are we meeting Monday morning?
Nine a.m. And then we will have House Research go through the whole bill for us, and then we'll go to the floor when we're done, and then we won't come back until Tuesday for public testimony, and then it looks like Tuesday evening we'll mark it up and do amendments and all that stuff. So I just want a lot of people to have time to kind of think through what's over the weekend. So thank you for that, Representative Lanning.
If we're not going to have floor session on Tuesday, I would hope we would start earlier.
Yes, we're Tuesday at 9 o'clock as well, is what we're scheduled now. And then if we didn't have floor sessions, which we don't know, we would still recess between public testimony and the amendments for, you know, whatever people would need, so people can think through, as a result of public testimony, what they might want to change. So, okay. Thank you for that. Thank you. We are adjourned. Have a-